House Civil Law Committee will come to order. The chair recognizes a quorum. Can I have a motion on the minutes for March 6th?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Minutes from March 6th have been moved. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. Motion passes. Thank you. First bill on, only bill on the calendar for today is House File 1054. Representative Clark. Members, just to give you an idea how we plan to proceed today, we will give an opportunity for the proponents of the bill to testify. After they've been given their time, out of respect for the individuals who came here today, members of the public, each testifier will be given 2 minutes. My staff will keep time after that. When the testifiers have 15 seconds left, a yellow card will be held up, and when the testifier's time is complete, a red card will be held up, at which time I will notify the testifier they are to stop their testimony. This is because we have many people signed up. After testimony is complete, members of the committee will have an opportunity to speak. Also, aside from the author's amendment, no amendments have been filed. Therefore, it will be a debate on the bill as it stands. And after that, we will take a vote. That vote will happen before midnight. But after the committee time this morning, the committee will reconvene at 6 p.m. promptly. Are there any questions from members of the committee? Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And do you know, can you tell us, share with us how many testifiers are on the docket?
I believe it's approximately 60.
And are they in any particular order? Are you going opponents, proponents, or are you mixing them in?
Yes, Representative Scott, we will be going proponents and opponents. And I would note that approximately 75% of the testifiers who signed up designated themselves as proponents, and approximately 25% designated themselves as opponents. But we will, at least at the start, be going proponent, opponent.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Representative Clark, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Well, I'm really happy to be here and to play a part in moving Minnesota forward. I was here 20 years ago as the chief author also when we passed the historic Minnesota Human Rights Act that added those words sexual orientation to the Minnesota Human Rights Law in order to protect our gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender Minnesotans from unlawful discrimination in employment, housing, public services, access to education, access to credit, and public accommodations. The passage of that law had taken 20 years of discussion in our communities and at the legislature before that could happen. This bill, House File 1054, has taken another 20 years to bring to a vote in the legislature. And this time our vote is guided and strengthened by last November's historic and resounding defeat of the anti-gay constitutional amendment against same-sex marriage by Minnesota voters. In November, Minnesotans said no to using our Constitution to permanently limit the basic freedoms of some to marry. That historic vote happened after more than 2 years of intense discussion among our citizenry. All over our state, Minnesotans were deeply engaged in discussions about marriage being about the love, commitment, and responsibility that two people share. Many families from all corners of the state, from all faiths, all classes, all race, all political affiliations, came out in support of same-sex couples and the families that they know, love, and respect in their own lives, in their own communities. I want to pass out something here. I'm passing out a photo that's very near and dear to me, and if some of you visit me in my office, you'll see this photo. I'll start by just saying in Minnesota, we don't turn our backs on family. The photo that you're looking at is the photo that was taken in June 1993 at the Minneapolis Gay Pride Parade right after we amended the Minnesota Human Rights Act to include sexual orientation. If you look there, you'll see me without my gray hair, my partner of 24 years, Jacqueline, my mother, two other family friends, and my father way over on the right. And read what the sign says. My parents proudly carried a sign that said, our gay children should have the same rights as our heterosexual children. They carried that And my mother told me that she cried all the way walking down the street hearing this because she was so moved and proud of what had happened and wanted to share that feeling, deep feeling. If either of my parents were alive today, I'm sure they would be here to say that no member of anyone's family, gay or straight, should be singled out and denied the basic freedom to marry simply because of who we are. Like so many other Minnesotans who voted to defeat the anti-gay marriage constitutional amendment last fall, my family knew and knows firsthand that same-sex couples pay taxes, vote, serve in the military, take care of their kids and their elders, and run businesses in Minnesota. We work hard and contribute to the same Minnesota system as everyone else. Committed same-sex couples should be treated fairly under the law, including the freedom to marry the person they love. I think it's clear now that Minnesotans believe that marriage is a unique promise of love, commitment, responsibility, and fidelity that two people share. That we believe in treating others the way we would want to be treated, and none of us would want to be told that it is illegal to marry the person we love. Freedom means freedom for everyone. Unfortunately, here in Minnesota, same-sex couples are still excluded from marriage. A poll taken by Minnesota United for All Families found that an overwhelming 72% of Minnesotans believe that these bills would either have a positive or minor or no impact on their lives. Real Minnesota families will be strengthened and thousands of children will be protected by passing this important bill today. Again, just a reminder, Minnesotans from every faith and political background are urging the legislature to take action this year, and that includes same-sex couples and to include same-sex couples in the freedom to marry. This discussion that I've had with many of you, my colleagues, has led to today's vote. This discussion that many of us have had with our colleagues and constituents throughout the state. Like the law that we passed 20 years ago, some of the discussion reminds me that we're having today reminds me a lot of that discussion. And what I kept hearing from colleagues in those days, even those who were struggling very hard with how to vote on this, said, I'm going to vote for that bill, to amend the Minnesota Human Rights Act, because it's the right thing to do. And I believe it's time for us to do the right thing again now, that no Minnesotan should be told that it's illegal to marry the person they love, and that includes me and many people that you all know and love. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to just briefly go through the bill.
Representative Clark, go ahead.
Okay. I believe we have an amendment, and if someone could move that, then it'll make it.
Representative Simon moves the amendment number. Representative Simon moves the A1 amendment. In order to get the bill in the shape the author so desires, all in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed say no.
No.
Motion passes. Thank you, Representative Clark.
Okay, so just briefly, and I know we'll have more time to discuss all the particulars, but the first section amends the Human Rights Act to expand religious freedom.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Scott.
Yes, if the author could explain what the amendment does, please.
Oh, sure.
Representative Clark.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Scott, it exchanges the word union for organization. I want to talk about labor unions because that is the language that's used in the Minnesota Human Rights Act and other places where we're talking about labor unions. And then the page 4, deleting line 8 to 11, deletes the federal law language. Mr. Chair.
Representative Scott.
Yes, if I could ask Representative Clark a question.
Go ahead, Representative Scott.
Could you explain the ramifications of removing that section, please?
Representative Clark.
Mr. Chair, it takes out the compliance with federal law, and so we're just dealing with our Minnesota statutes, not with federal law. And there's, I think one of the things is that it's clear there's no fiscal note that is applicable to this bill then.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so what you're saying with this amendment then is, regardless of what federal law says, that state law would trump, if this law passes, the state law would trump whatever the federal law says.
Representative Clark.
I don't know if trump would be the word I'd use. What I'd say is that state law here will be operative in Minnesota, and federal law, we're not applying federal law to our state law.
Thank you.
Representative Clark.
As I was saying, the first section amends the Minnesota Human Rights Act to expand religious freedom, and it specifically ensures freedom of religious institutions, nonprofit religious corporations, and affiliated educational institutions to refuse to participate in marriage to which they object on religious grounds. So it makes that clear. And it allows those religious entities to refuse goods, services, facilities, and accommodations to such marriage ceremonies and celebrations. Section 2 changes the Minnesota law to permit marriage between two persons, regardless of the gender of the spouses. Reaffirms that marriage in Minnesota is a civil contract. It leaves previous state law intact regarding the requirements for solemnization of marriage, presence of two witnesses, licensure, and so on. Section 3 amends the Minnesota law to remove same-sex union from the list of specifically prohibited marriages, and it repeals the prohibition on recognizing same-sex marriages from other states. Section 4 replaces a single reference to bride and groom with parties and the requirement that newly married couples must provide their address on their marriage license application. Section 5 removes the gender-specific references in the requirements for solemnizing a marriage. It also protects exclusive freedom of religious entities to preserve their own religious doctrine on the question of who may marry within their faith. Finally, it forbids any fine, pursuit, or
Representative Clark.
Penalty.
Representative Simon?
I'm sorry, Representative Clark and members. I think there's a typo on line 3.26 just before we left that section. I talked about this morning with Mr. Gehring. I think he can verify this, that the citation is just off. I'm sure it was a mistake, but instead of 517.08, it should be 517.04, just to get it in the shape it's supposed to be in, because 517.08 has to do with marriage licenses. 517.04 is the statute that talks that is titled Persons Authorized to Perform Marriages, and I think that's what the author meant there, clearly.
Okay. And Representative Simon offers that oral amendment as stated on line 3.26, changing 517.08 to 517.04.
Right. And Mr. Gehring, is that accurate? is my statement accurate in terms of, or Ms. Mullen?
Mr. Chair, Representative Simon, I think that's correct. So the cross-reference should be 517.04 in that line.
Okay.
Thank you. Then all in favor of the oral amendment as stated, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no. Motion passes. Thank you, Representative Clark. Please proceed.
Thank you. Section 6 contains two provisions. The first makes it clear that this marriage bill will make no change in the individual human rights and expansive religious freedom protections that are already contained in the 20-year-old Minnesota Human Rights Act. It ensures that the marriage bill has no effect on pre-existing anti-discrimination law, which means it does not increase the legal liability of any person, business, labor union, or religious institution. Mm-hmm. It expressly states that the marriage law will not impose legal liability on nonprofit religious institutions for providing adoption, foster care, or social services, provided that they do not accept public money for these specific services. The second provision, because we removed the federal one, the second provision removes gender-specific rights and responsibilities of spouses and parents under Minnesota law, makes them applicable regardless of gender. Section 7 equalizes the availability of divorce for same-sex and opposite-sex couples under the state law. Current law requires that a person seeking divorce must live in Minnesota for 180 days prior to filing. This section allows couples to seek a divorce in Minnesota courts if they were validly married in Minnesota, but now live in a state where they are denied divorce because of their sex or sexual orientation. So, Mr. Chairman, with that, I know we have many witnesses, and so I'll just wait. I know we'll have questions on the bill later. I guess that's what we're doing this evening. So I thank you for that opportunity to present the bill, and if we could begin with the witnesses, I'd greatly appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Representative Clark. Then we'll begin with the first testifier, Reverend Jerry McAfee, New Salem Missionary Baptist Church. Reverend McAfee. We'll move on to the next opponent, Pastor Gus Booth, War Road Community Church. And while Mr. Booth is on his way down here to testify, I will notify members that due to the sheer number of testifiers, in order to ensure that everyone gets an opportunity, we will limit testimony to 2 minutes. A sign will be held up when you have 15 seconds left, and when the stop sign is held up, you need to stop. Also, members, there will be no applause or otherwise any kinds of adulation or expressions of dissatisfaction with testimony. This is a hearing where we expect both sides to be afforded respect in their testimony. Thank you. With that, Reverend Booth.
Good morning. I'd like to point out that this bill does not adequately protect religious liberties. That's a big deal. It's a constitutional deal. At best, it only concerns itself with what goes inside the church and not about religious liberty outside the church. In fact, as I'm sure you know, people are already uncomfortable voicing their support for traditional marriage outside of church based on their religious beliefs of fear of being labeled a bigot or narrow-minded or holier-than-thou kind of person. I think if gay marriage is legalized, it's abundantly clear this will only get worse. And I feel like, why must the rights of conscience continually bow to redefine marriage? Should a person's beliefs be confined to the four walls of their church? We've seen that this has happened to parents, business owners who exercise their rights of conscience in other states where same-sex marriage has been legalized. And there are protections for the religious liberties of individuals, parents, and business owners who are not affiliated with any other church or religious organization. I feel like we didn't vote to legalize same-sex marriage this last November, and with this legislation, with respect, it's just overreaching, and it's not the will of the people. Before the election, we were told that we could vote against the marriage amendment and nothing would change. We were told that if the amendment was defeated, our marriage laws wouldn't change and same-sex marriage would remain illegal. We now know that we were sold a false bill of goods. In fact, it didn't take more than a month before the mask was pulled off, and we learned that the real objective was to defeat the amendment and then to force gay marriage on all Minnesotans. And in northern Minnesota, we don't appreciate this kind of bait-and-switch tactic. This false labeling continues as some on this committee and the legislature are saying that the defeat of the marriage amendment means that people in Minnesota have been given a mandate to legalize same-sex marriage, and it's just crazy. It's not true. As you know, I'm a pastor and a leader in my community, and I want to make it clear that the vast majority of people of my district, the House district and the Senate district, voted to pass the marriage amendment by huge margins, 66% in the House district, 65.6% in the Senate district. And many of you have said that you are listening to your constituents, and I urge you to listen and remember your constituents and how they voted.
Pastor Booth, please wrap up your testimony.
Yes, 10 seconds. These numbers aren't isolated.
Please end your testimony, Reverend Booth. Please wrap it up.
Okay.
Final sentence.
Those numbers are not just in my district. They are all around the greater state, and it's just the metro area that's wanting to force this on the whole state and not the rest of us.
Thank you for your testimony. Yep. Next testifier, Dr. Paul Melkert, American Pediatric Association.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak with you today on behalf of the House File 1054. My name is Dr. Paul Melkert. I'm a pediatrician, a father, and also a member of the American Academy of Pediatrics, which is a national organization of more than 62,000 pediatricians committed to the attainment of the optimal physical, mental, and social health and well-being of all children and young adults. The American Academy of Pediatrics supports marriage equality for all capable and consenting adults, including those of the same gender, as a means of guaranteeing all federal and state rights and benefits as a means to ensure the long-term security for their children. Freedom means freedom for everyone, equality means equality for everyone, and security should be secured for all children. Civil marriage should be a social institution that promotes healthy families regardless of whether they are headed by a same or opposite gendered partners. It confers a powerful set of rights, benefits, and protections that cannot be obtained by any other means. By denying marriage equality, this can greatly threaten children's access to health insurance and also to health care services. The board of the Minnesota chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics unanimously voted to uphold the rights of family and children to the legal, financial, and psychosocial security that comes from having legally recognized parents who are committed to each other and to the welfare of their children. Security comes through love and commitment, not through sexual orientation. All families benefit from the assurance that comes from knowing your family is safe, secure, and afforded equal protection under the law. There is broad consensus by all medical professional organizations based on hundreds of papers and more than 30 years of research that there is no relationship between a parent's sexual orientation and any measure of a child's emotional, psychosocial, or behavioral adjustment. Rather, children's optimal development seems to be more influenced by the nature of the relationships and interactions of the family than the particular structural form it takes. Thank you for this opportunity to speak to you today.
Thank you very much, Dr. Melker. Next testifier, Pastor Wayne Maxwell, Woodland Bible Church. Pastor Maxwell. Next testifier, Professor Teresa Collette, St. Thomas University.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Teresa Collette. I'm a professor of law at the University of St. Thomas, where I teach constitutional litigation. I've been involved in the issue of attempts to redefine marriage for almost a decade now. I'm here today to provide my personal, professional opinion and do not represent the University of St. Thomas in the views I'm about to express. There are two main points in the limited time I have before this committee I would like to make. First, no one's children are protected or their interests advanced by redefining marriage. Marriage is the only civil institution that ensures that every child is both legally and connected to their biological parents, their mother and their father. There is no child that has ever been born into this world that did not have a biological mother and a biological father. We need to maintain the current definition of marriage in order to protect that particular association, because social science confirms what common sense and tradition has told us for generations, and that is children do best when raised in the permanent committed relationship of both a mother and a father. Generally, each parent of a different sex contributes different characteristics and enhances different virtues in their children. While it is true that there are many other arrangements in which children have been successfully reared, the simple fact is it is beyond dispute that the optimal setting is between a mother and a father. This particular bill would require us not only to sacrifice that principle of civil society, but also to sacrifice our most precious liberties. The protections that are afforded for freedom of thought, freedom of speech, and freedom of religion in this particular legislation are inadequate and will not protect those of us who believe that marriage should remain between a man and a woman. Students throughout this country have been subjected to expulsion and to silencing in public schools, as have other professionals. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to this committee today.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Chairman. Professor Collette. The next testimony will be from Randy, Phil, and Jake Reitan. And after that, we will have Ms. Grace Evans, accompanied by Jeff Evans. So please be prepared to proceed. Please take a seat, introduce yourself for the record, and begin your testimony.
Hello, I'm Randy Reitan, and we're here as a family. This is my husband, Philip, and our youngest son, Jacob. We love Jacob so very much. We come today to you as a family with dreams. Dreams that one day soon, Minnesota will be a state that grants our son, Jacob, the freedom to marry. We want for Jacob what has been so precious to us for 40 years. We want Jacob to have the joy of a wedding, the firm foundation a marriage brings to families, and the societal support that comes with all marriage.
Jacob came out 15 years ago. Rondi and I didn't know anyone. We didn't know what it meant to be gay. We didn't have any gay friends. We simply didn't understand. Nor had we ever faced the discrimination that followed. Jacob was patient with us. He led us. We found precious friends in the gay community, and they enriched our lives. We have been on a journey as a family ever since, working to see the day of equality. Our family longs to rejoice at Jacob's wedding.
Over the past few years, I've stood by the side of each of my three siblings as they married the ones they love. The locations of their nuptials were scenic and special, my eldest brother, Ben, on the sands of a beach in San Diego, my other brother, Josh, in the quaint backyard of the St. Paul College Club, and my sister, Britta, on the beautiful Mississippi River at the Nicollet Island Pavilion. During each ceremony, I wiped away tears as my siblings exchanged vows and forged new families with their beloved. And after each ceremony, I took pen to paper and signed marriage licenses for each couple. By doing so, I made official in the eyes of the government what was already official in the hearts of the newlyweds. As a gay man, I should have the same opportunity to marry as my three siblings. My desire to love is no less valid and no less worthy of recognition by our state than theirs. My ability to enjoy the rights and responsibility of marriage is in your hands, and I hope you'll treat me as you would treat my siblings, or your children, or yourself. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next testifier, Ms. Grace Evans, and subsequent to that, we will have testimony by Karen Wills. Ms. Grace Evans. Ms. Evans, please introduce yourself for the record.
My name is Grace Evans, and I want to thank you for letting me speak today. Even though I'm only 11 years old, I know that everyone deserves to have a mom and a dad. If you change the law, it says two moms or two dads could get married. It would take away something very important for children like me across the state. My mom is very important to me because she teaches me about things about being a girl. She is kind, thoughtful, gentle, and beautiful. She cares for me and others and listens very well to things I want to talk to her about. I am learning from her to be a good woman, wife, and mother someday. Even though I learned some of these things from my dad, my mom teaches them in a very special way. Without my mom, it would be very hard for me to learn them. She is my role model on how to be a girl, and I love her very much. My dad is also very important to me because he protects me and helps me get the confidence to be a girl who is growing up to be a woman. He takes care of problems in a way that my mom cannot, just like my mom wouldn't be able to be the woman she is without my dad. I wouldn't be able to be the woman I want to be without my dad. Because he is strong, wise, and different than my mom, I learned things from him that I would not be able to learn in the same way from my mom. Since every child needs a mom and a dad to be born, I don't think we can change that children need a mom and a dad. I believe God made it that way. I know some disagree, but I want to ask you this question. Which parent do I not need, my mom or my dad? I'll ask again, which parent do I not need, my mom or my dad? I hope that you can see that every child needs a mom and a dad. Please don't change your law on marriage to say otherwise. Thank you for letting me speak today.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Evans. Next testifier is Karen Wills, Minnesota Psychological Association. After that, we'll have testimony from Jason Adkins, Director of the Minnesota Catholic Conference. Paige will please distribute the handout. Please take your seat and state your name for the record, Ms. Wills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Karen Wills. I've been a licensed clinical child psychologist for 30 years, with 15 at hospitals in Rochester, Minnesota, and Minneapolis. It feels right to support HF 1054 today on Mental Health Day at the Capitol. Last year, Minnesota's psychologists, psychiatrists, social workers, and marriage and family therapists reached a consensus. Our professional ethics, our clinical wisdom as therapists, and our review of authoritative scientific research led state and national mental health associations to support marriage equality. Psychologically, marriage is a deeply meaningful stage in the personal and family life cycle. It's more than a legal contract, more than a civil union. Far from seeking to redefine marriage, most same-sex couples hope to participate fully in marriages aligned with their faith tradition and their family tradition for all the same reasons other people do. As they care for each other, for children, for elderly relatives, legal protections become essential to family security. Newlyweds are rooted in family, accepted or not. Marriage preserves the family tree and creates a new branch. And what matters to children into adulthood is how well their family branch functions. Kids do better when parents communicate with love, respect, and reasonable rules, whether their household is headed by two men, two women, or one of each. And there is no evidence that children do best with one man and one woman as parents. The Regnerus study, which you'll hear about, and I passed out a handout about, of unhappy people who claim that their parents had same-sex affairs does not pertain to children from functioning families. Kids and adults with same-sex parents do just as well as anyone else, and those families do even better in accepting communities that treat them fairly. Here are decades of data, but I'm out of time. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Wills. Next testifier is Mr. Jason Adkins, Executive Director of the Minnesota Catholic Conference. Subsequent to that, we will have Kate Wolfe.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Jason Adkins. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Catholic Conference, which is the public policy voice of the Catholic Church in Minnesota. The Church's opposition to marriage redefinition is well known, and the reasons can be found in many places, and I need not repeat them all here. I did want to take on the common assertion, namely that the current definition of marriage, because it is supported by particular faith communities, though opposed by others, constitutes an impermissible imposition of one supposedly religious definition at the exclusion of others. Therefore, it is claimed we need a neutral definition that allows all groups to marry who they want. This claim is utterly false, as the proposed statute is not religiously or morally neutral. What is at stake are two competing visions of the human person and the institution of marriage. The operative question is not which religious group or groups supports which understanding. The question is which one is more rational and best serves the well-being of persons and society. The current definition of marriage accounts for how persons are created as male and female, made for life and made for each other. It's only in this particular human union, rooted in the gender differences of men and women, in which children can result and which provides the best context for their nurture and care. The alternative being proposed, far from being value neutral, communicates and enshrines in our law a number of falsehoods, most particularly that gender is irrelevant or merely a social construct, an identity that we can put on or take off like a pair of jeans, that human nature is plastic and that men and women are essentially interchangeable parts, that a mother and a father are not particularly important for child well-being, that the marriage of a man and woman is not necessary nor necessarily the ideal place to create and raise a child, that important pre-political social institutions can be redefined by the state at will, and that the state has the power or even the jurisdiction to do so. We recognize that there are many well-intentioned people who simply want to get married and have a marriage license, but we have to recognize that there are deeper ideological issues at stake and that we need to consider the consequences for all of society. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Adkins. Next testifier will be Kate Wolfe, and subsequent to that, we will have Ms. Aaron Sorensen. Please introduce yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kate Wolfe, and I'm here to speak in support of House File 1054. When I met Mary Ann in 1980, I knew she was the one. There was no doubt in my mind that she was the person I was meant to spend the rest of my life with. We shared the same traditional ideas, that marriage was about love, caring, and commitment to one person for life. Without the legal ability to marry, we exchanged rings and committed privately to each other. In 2000, Vermont became the first state to permit civil unions of same-sex couples. We were joined there in civil union on our 20th anniversary. Our love and commitment to each other was finally recognized somewhere, but it wasn't our home, and civil union status implied that we weren't good enough to be married. In 2005, Canada recognized the freedom of same-sex couples to marry. We traveled to Toronto and were married by a minister from the United Church of Canada. Our vows were from the 16th century Book of Common Prayer. After 25 years of waiting, we were legally married. It was the best day of my life. Then we returned to Minnesota. We were hit with the reality that our marriage was no longer recognized when we were processed separately at customs. Now when we are asked our marital status on official forms, we don't know what to say. Some places consider us married, others consider us strangers. When we travel, we carry our marriage certificate, our living wills, and our power of attorney forms. As we grow older, we worry about what will happen if one of us is hospitalized. Will we be able to see each other or make important medical decisions? Marriage is important. It provides stability in our communities. It sets an example of long-term faithful commitment, allows a couple to care for and protect each other and our families, and helps couples honor their commitment until death. Recognizing our marriage and allowing other couples like us to marry doesn't redefine marriage. It honors the tradition of marriage. I ask you to please support House File 1054. Thank you for allowing me to testify.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Wolf. Next testifier is Ms. Erin Sorensen. Subsequent to that, we will have Marilyn Carlson Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the committee members for allowing me to be here today. My name is Erin Sorensen, and I'm a graduating senior at Northwestern College. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today and share a portion of my beliefs on the issue of marriage facing society today. As an advocate for marriage remaining between one man and one woman, I feel compelled in urging you against allowing this bill to redefine the definition of marriage. This bill would not only redefine marriage for those whose interests it is serving, but would redefine marriage for everyone in society today. Yes, society is changing and fluctuating, but our traditional definition of marriage should not. This bill would shift our focus away from the interests of our future children and towards the image of two parents regardless of their gender. Coming from a family who strongly upholds this belief has affirmed me in my decision today. The committed relationship between my mother and my father is an image I hold and hope to aspire to one day. This bill would distort that image. I know and understand the consequences the passing of this bill would bring, which is why I'm standing firm upon my belief today in choosing the right for my future children. Our country was established upon traditional values, those of which we still uphold today. A new contemporary vision upon marriage has not benefited us thus far and has caused much division and much separation in our society, which is why now, more than ever, we need to cling to those beliefs that we know to be true and to be right. The recent vote on the marriage amendment did not represent the entire youth of Minnesota, and I'm a strong advocate of marriage remaining between one man and one woman. I can affirm you in the beliefs of my generation today, those of a solid foundation of a home. Today, I trust you with the future definition of marriage for myself, our future children, and society. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Sorensen. Next testifier, Marilyn Carlson Nelson. Subsequent to that, we will have Doug Mainwaring.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, and distinguished members of the committee. I'm Marilyn Carlson Nelson, the chair of Carlson. Last year, I spoke out against the amendment that threatened to enshrine discrimination against gay marriage in our state constitution. In their wisdom, the voters of Minnesota rejected that amendment, making our state the first in the nation to strike a blow against this kind of discrimination, which I felt was entirely consistent with the values that I grew up with in this state of inclusion, tolerance, and caring culture. It's now time to finish what we started. As a business owner, I must stress that Minnesota cannot afford to disadvantage itself in a workplace, particularly among the next generation of workers, those under 45 whom research shows favor the freedom to marry 2-to-1. At a time when our own state demographer warns that our annual labor force growth will drop to nearly zero in the next dozen years as baby boomers retire, we must aggressively retain our own brilliant young students and attract others to our state. These are essential to infusing our state with energy and innovation and leadership we need to continue to be competitive. And these young people, for the most part, are not attracted to discriminatory environments in which to live and work. That's one reason why so many of our Minnesota companies have already been speaking out on gay equality. Hundreds of businesses, including the majority of our state's Fortune 500 companies, grant partner health benefits. Workplace policies, I assure you, are not a substitute for equal rights under the law. As a CEO, I can tell you, it does not work to have second-class citizens in any corporation or any state. So I'm here today to talk about business, but also about the unfinished business. We must fully live up to our Minnesota values of inclusiveness and human dignity. I say thank you to continue to have our gay citizens and their children have full rights under the law. If we don't, it's no more than adult bullying, and we must end it. When this day is done, I hope that others may look to us and say that Minnesota got it right from start to finish. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nelson, for your testimony. Next testifier will be Doug Mainwaring, and followed by Mr. Mainwaring will be Laura Nelson and Kelly Olmsted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Doug Mainwaring. I'm gay, and for a very long time I was pro same-sex marriage. After all, it only seemed fair and equitable until I began to consider why I supported it. I'm the dedicated father of two teenage boys. After their mother and I divorced, I began dreaming about marrying a man to join me in raising my kids. It slowly dawned on me that even if I found another man who was as dedicated to my kids as I, my exact double, there would be a gaping hole in that household and in my son's lives. Two men or two women in a relationship is not exactly the same as a man and a woman. Children need and deserve both a mom and a dad. To the male parents in this committee, if you vote for this legislation, this is a declaration that your wife plays no particular role in your kids' lives. And to the moms, a vote for this legislation indicates your husband is expendable. Same-sex marriage will not redefine marriage, it will undefine and unravel it. And in so doing, it will undefine children. This is not progressive legislation, it is regressive. This isn't the first time our society has undefined marriage. No-fault divorce sounded like a great idea at the time, but children became collateral damage, chattel, in the selfish pursuits of adults. Same-sex marriage will bring us further down that path, depriving children of their right to a mom or a dad. Don't allow the demands of adults claiming they're entitled to fulfillment to trump the rights and needs of kids. To the committee members and your fellow legislators, ignore the media's constant manufactured urgency to institute same-sex marriage. There is an agenda to weaken family life and to produce a populace which is more dependent on government and more receptive to greater government intrusion in our lives. It is not homophobic to oppose same-sex marriage. Marriage is not about love, commitment, and responsibility. It's about kids, and we should tremble in fear at the notion of undoing it. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Mainwaring. Next testifiers will be Laura Nelson and Kelly Olmsted, followed by Ms. Nelson and Olmsted will be Grace Fink.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Laura Nelson Olmsted, and this is my wife, Kelly Olmsted. Thank you for allowing us to testify. We do have a handout, if I could hand it to the
page. Please, the page will distribute Ms. Nelson's handout.
Thank you. On August 15th, 2009, Kelly and I stood before our friends and family, and we exchanged vows. We promised to love each other, to trust each other, to walk through this life together. As I assume yours did, our wedding included laughter, tears, good food, music, and a lot of love. What our wedding did not have, what our marriage still does not have, is any recognition by the state we call home. After our wedding, we started a family. Our son Eli was born in June of 2010. And in the sleepless nights, in the groggy mornings that followed, Kelly and I leaned into each other. We leaned into our love as we learned the ropes, just like any other new parents. In May 2011, our daughter Alexis was born. And just as we did with her brother, we packed a bag for the hospital with our camera and baby clothes. And we also included our power of attorney and our medical directive in case something happened to me while I was in labor or after our daughter was born, because Kelly would need to step in, and legally we're strangers. These days, our lives are filled with story time and blocks, Play-Doh, dolls, the occasional toddler drama. It's amazing. It's exhausting at times. It's family. Kelly and I are both attorneys, and we have cobbled together through contracts, second parent adoptions, medical directives, powers of attorney, as much protection as we can for our family. But it is not enough. It is not marriage. We still feel vulnerable. We don't know how well it will hold up if it's ever tested. And we're the lucky ones. Through our education and our resources, we have the ability to have at least these basic protections. But you have the ability today, you have the ability this session, to recognize that there are families just like ours all across Minnesota. Families that are built on love, families that need and that deserve the same protections and the same rights as any other family in Minnesota. I ask you today to support House File 1054. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Nelson. Thank you, Ms. Olmstead. Next testifier is Grace Fink. Followed by Ms. Fink will be Mitch Azarkan. Ms. Grace Fink. Next testifier, Lindsay Warkenton. Ms. Arkenton, please introduce yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members, for allowing me to be here today. My name is Lindsay Warkenton, and I'm 17 years old. Because of my age, I was unable to vote this past fall, so I really do appreciate you taking the time to hear my voice. A lot of people assume that since I am young, I do not care about serious subjects such as marriage. This is untrue for both me and many of my classmates. This topic is very important to me, and the conclusion will affect both me, my future children, and future generations. Marriage is not merely a legal status to be rearranged through political process. The history of marriage transcends modern law, and in essence is not defined a topic that politicians nor society define. I've heard that marriage must be redefined because the current definition inhibits love, free expression, and is not equal. If marriage is the only way to express intimacy, then the free love from the 60s is void. Society has shifted morally throughout history, but never until now have politicians in America felt compelled to redefine a term that predates the 13 colonies by thousands of years. Call same-sex relationships what you will, but do you really have the authority to call it marriage? What is wrong with polygamy? Is it love or is it equal? What is wrong with living together? Is it love or is it equal? Maybe you can attempt to redefine love, but please do not seek to redefine marriage. The movement to redefine marriage is really a rebellion against society's past and against a political worldview or a biblical worldview. You can make up your own terms, but you did not define marriage, and therefore you cannot redefine it either. Please do not redefine that which you nor I nor your ancestors defined. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Warkenton. Next testifier will be Mitch Azarkan.
Mr. Chair and committee members, good morning and thank you. Mom, my name is Mitch Azarkan. I live in Rochester, Minnesota, where I work as a surgical core tech at Rochester Methodist Hospital. I'm also a proud SEIU, Healthcare Minnesota member. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk to you today about why the freedom to marry is important to me and why I support Senate File 925 and House File 1054. Growing up, I had seen how much love my parents and grandparents had for each other. They were committed to each other till the very end. And they remain my role models to this day. When my grandfather died, my grandmother passed away shortly after. We all knew that she couldn't continue to live without her best friend. My parents was married for 25 years, and that only ended when my father had passed on as well. My mother is a widower now and has never remarried. To me, marriage is about love and commitment. The vow of to have and to hold from this day forward, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health, until death do us part, is a vow that should not be afforded to only between one man and one woman. It should be for all couples, and that includes gay and lesbian couples who are also willing to make that same commitment with their partners. Chairman and committee members, when you look at me, I want you to see a lesbian with hopes and aspirations of being able to marry the woman that I love someday and start a family. When you look at me, I want you to see a labor leader who believes and upholds the dignity and worth of all workers. I want you to see my union, who is advocating for marriage for me and all our LGBTQ brothers and sisters. And lastly, when you look at me, I want you to see a citizen who loves this country, a citizen who believes in the promise of an America that will continue to stand for freedom, equality, and justice, an America that will continue to hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That is why I support SF 925 and HF 1054.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Arca. Next testifier, Mike Fry. Committee page, please pass out. It's in the packet. Thank you.
Yes, sir. My name is Mike Fry, and I speak as a concerned Minnesotan and father and a husband. And the thing about same-sex marriage is that people who marry do have sex. And when same-sex people are married, they do have sex. There's something called sodomy. Sodomy, defined in Minnesota, is sex by or with the mouth or through the anus. When there's ejaculation into a vagina, there's a barrier there, as in your packet it states there, of a cellular tissue that doesn't allow the sperm that has an enzyme at the head of it to penetrate the blood flow. It is designed to go to the egg. That enzyme is designed to burn the outside membrane of the egg cell, go inside the egg, and then deposit the DNA. We call that conception. When ejaculation occurs inside of a colon, it's highly absorbent material. The cells do not have a barrier for the sperm and those enzymes to enter into the blood flow. When the enzymes enter into the blood flow and a continued prolonged environment to that happens, these enzymes in the blood flow, it causes what we know as AIDS, acquired immune deficiency syndrome. And AIDS, of course, brings on common diseases, colds, and things, and it magnifies them to a point where it's unhealthy. Not only does it strengthen the disease within the carrier of AIDS, but it also, with a person that has a destroyed immune system, but it also strengthens the disease that can be spread to the society at large. There's an example in Los Angeles County in California where among the gay community, a rash, almost like boils, and a very raw skin broke out on the hands, feet, butt, mouth of these gay communities, and they couldn't find a cure for it for a long time. These doctors called the Center for Disease Control, and they couldn't find this cure for it. The cure they found, a very extraneous antibiotic, was Zyvox. It cost $2,400 for one course of use. I urge you to vote against the changes inside this bill because it's going to put a health risk to the society at large, and it's going to put a financial burden on the people of Minnesota to be able to support all the diseases that will come out of this. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Fry. Next testimony will be from Eric Strand, Edina Community Lutheran Church. Subsequent to that will be Professor... Oh, understood. So there's no one else. Testimony after... Eric Strand will be C.N. Patrice Becker and Laura Marie Kazmarek.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to testify in support of House File 1054. My name is Pastor Eric Strand. I'm pastor at Edina Community Lutheran Church and serve as a has served as a pastor there for 24 years. I come here today as a pastor, as a Christian, but also as a husband and as a father and as a grandfather, to ask that you vote yes to ensure that same-gender couples have the same opportunity to marry in Minnesota as straight couples. I've been a pastor for almost 34 years and been privileged to participate in significant moments of many lives. Hundreds of baptisms, marriages, and funerals, all events where family and friends and larger community gather to support one another. In particular, I've been blessed to share in the celebrations of marriage, where two people come to make public promises to one another, promises to be with and for the other in all that is to come, whether it be joys or sorrows. We in the church believe that these promises of lifelong until death do us part promises reflect God's promises to creation and to humanity. We also believe that these public events allow and invite family and friends and community to make promises of support and accountability to the couple. And it is such promises that marriages become events of joy and celebration in the strengthening of human community. But I've also witnessed same-gender couples make the same promises of love and commitment with little support from their government or from larger community institutions. As a person who regularly prays and reads scripture, I am led to advocate for policies and laws which will enhance and provide protections for all couples who choose to make such wonderful, bold commitments as marriage. This, I believe, will build up the common good for all citizens. As a person of faith, I would advocate for the full support of the law to deepen and strengthen the promises that all couples make in our religious ceremonies and rites. Thank you for your time and letting me testify.
Thank you very much, Mr. Strand. Next testifier is C.N. Patrice Becker and Laura Marie Kaczmarek. Subsequent to that will be Doug Donnelly, University Baptist Church.
Mr. Chairman, could I just...
Representative Clark.
Can I just let you know that I am being called to another committee to vote? It's not my disrespect for the committee, but I'll be back as soon as I'm done voting.
Understood. Thank you, Representative Clark. Please introduce yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to share our thoughts with you today. My name is C.N. Becker, and this is, in 9 other states in Washington, D.C., along with 11 countries and parts of Mexico, Laura, who is my legally recognized wife, but in our home state of Minnesota, we are legal strangers. We got married legally on April 28, 2008, just over the border outside of Thunder Bay, Canada. It was a beautiful ceremony that celebrated our love and commitment to each other. You don't know how much it meant to us when the chaplain said, "I now declare you legally married." We had never felt so validated. Unfortunately, when we got to the border to cross back into Minnesota, that validation slipped away, and we felt the reality of being second-class citizens once again.
We aren't asking for special rights. We are asking for equal rights. Sienna and I have a relationship that is based on the traditional values of respect, trust, communication, love, and support, just like a heterosexual relationship. We met, dated, and fell in love. We would like to take the next step and become legally married here in Minnesota, but we cannot. Our discriminatory law prohibits us from getting married and even from having our marriage legally recognized.
You have the opportunity to be leaders and role models today and to make a real difference in the lives of many thousands of Minnesotans. Allowing HF 1054 to go to the floor for a vote would mean that you value your LGBT families, friends, and constituents. Your support today will signify that we have indeed come a long way. Please support HF 1054 and send it to the House floor for a vote. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Becker and Ms. Kaczmarek. Next testifier, Doug Donnelly, University Baptist Church. And subsequent to Mr. Donnelly will be Russ Stanton, Director of Government Relations, Interfaculty Organization.
Good morning. My name is Doug Donnelly, and I have the honor of serving alongside the good people of University Baptist Church in Minneapolis as their pastor. I'm so glad that the House is considering this bill. It's high time that all Minnesotans are granted the freedom to marry the love of their lives and have those unions recognized by the state. We ought not relegate certain people to second-class citizenship. Restricting marriage rights only to one class of people is beneath us as a state. I come here as a Baptist minister. Baptists believe that everyone has the right and responsibility to interpret Scripture for themselves. We make our own decisions about how we govern our churches, whom we call as our leaders, and whom we marry within our walls. The Baptist experiment is all about protecting the freedom of the minority. The way the current legislation reads, restricting marriage reads, it limits our religious freedom. In fact, it codifies one interpretation of Scripture into our law. I have no doubt that well-meaning people wrote that legislation, but it's outdated. And it is the state making law based upon one interpretation of Scripture. Those who faithfully read Scripture as saying that God recognizes and affirms all people regardless of sexual orientation are being discriminated against. To say nothing of our LGBT sisters and brothers who don't get the 515 benefits granted by law to married couples. I've been a pastor for over 23 years. I've officiated at dozens of weddings over my career. Most of them have been opposite-sex marriages, and some have been same-sex marriages. And each time I preside at a wedding, gay or straight, I find that my love and my marriage to my wife is strengthened and enhanced. Love begets love. Granting the freedom to marry the love of one's life enhances love and stabilizes society. Heck, it's conservative. I stand by the freedom of those who love each other and who are committed to the sacrifice and gift of marriage, and I declare that all ought to have that brave union recognized by the state. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Donnelly. Next testifier, Russ Stanton, Director of Government Relations Interfaculty Organization. Subsequent to Mr. Stanton will be Neil Tao, Professor, Program Director, and Chair, the Social Work Department of Metropolitan State University, and after that will be David Wheeler, Minister and Member of the United Methodists for Marriage Equality. Please proceed, Mr. Stanton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Russ Stanton. I'm Director of Government Relations for the Interfaculty Organization, which is the union for the faculty at Minnesota's seven state universities. We strongly support marriage equality, and we urge you to pass 1054. Our main reason, of course, for supporting passage is because we believe that our gay and lesbian members, like all citizens across this state, deserve the right to marry the person they love. But we also support this legislation for more pragmatic reasons. It is important for the recruitment and retention of faculty at our state universities. Our state universities recruit faculty from all over the United States and the world. Many of the faculty that we try to recruit are in committed same-sex relations. However, with a growing number of states and countries, including Iowa on our south border and Canada on our north border, allowing equal marriage, and an even larger number offering equal domestic partner benefits, we're at a disadvantage. What married couple from New York or Iowa would want to come to work in Minnesota if their marriage is no longer recognized and their benefits would no longer be equal? The inequality of benefits for gay couples in our state universities is substantial. For instance, gay and lesbian employees are ineligible for family coverage under our state health plan. That benefit alone is worth about $10,000 a year. We find it extremely unfair that gay members of our union, who are just as talented, who work just as hard, who pay equal dues and pay equal taxes, are denied equal benefits to their married colleagues. While we have long supported equal domestic partner benefits, we think the most efficient way, the most effective way of achieving equality is to simply allow equal marriage. Passing marriage equality will allow many Minnesotans to live happier, more fulfilled lives, and it hurts no one. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Stanton. Mr. Neil Tao. Subsequent to Mr. Tao will be David Wheeler. I'm not seeing Mr. Tao, so Mr. Wheeler, would you please come testify?
Chair Lesh, committee members, thank you. Delighted to be here. I'm wearing three hats, and when you're as bald as I am, it's a good idea to wear several hats. I'm a citizen, and that's really the most important of all the offices I hold. My second office is that I'm a United Methodist pastor. I've served churches around the state of Minnesota. And I did the wedding for my niece and my nephew, and I have another nephew who's gay, and he hasn't decided yet to be married. But it would be pretty hard for me to be able to do his sibling's service and not be able to do his. I really believe that this law will strengthen families and marriage. It's a no threat to anybody else, and it will value people and will make a difference. Now, I'm an elected public official. I was first elected as a Duluth City Councilor, like somebody else who's sitting here today, many years ago, and I sponsored the Human Rights Amendment in Duluth back in the mid-90s, and we passed it over the veto of a very conservative Christian mayor. And I really believe that it's very vital as an elected person that we stand for human rights for all people. But it's not just about rights, it's about marriage, it's about commitment, it's about love, it's about making a difference. I also serve now on the Board of Estimate and Taxation for the City of Minneapolis. And we set the local property tax levy, which is kind of important in terms of what happens in the life of the city. And we want to have as many families and couples within Minneapolis, and we have a wonderful variety of people who will continue to be involved in our economic life. We heard from Marilyn Carlson Nelson what a huge difference this really makes in our economy, and I think that's important. I just want to end by saying that you've all been elected to lead, not to follow, to lead. This is the year to do it, and the reason it's the year to do it is next year is an election year, and you need to get out in front of the voters and say yes to all Minnesotans. Thank you very much for your hard work, and we look forward to a great result.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Wheeler. Next testifier is Tatey Benson, and subsequent to that, we will have Robert Lawser and Dwayne Bandel.
Hello, Chair and committee members. My name is Tatiana Benson, and I've lived in St. Paul my whole life. And 5 years ago, I started working for St. Paul Parks and Recreation. I worked my way up from YJC, which, for those who don't know, is Youth Job Corps, to a rec leader at Hancock Recreation Center. When I got my promotion, I signed up for my union card with AFSCME, and that is how I came to speak with you guys today. Now, today I've been asked to speak about my opinion on the marriage bill and its importance to me. As a member of the queer community, this bill holds great importance to me. Yes, Minnesota defeated the marriage amendment in November, but that was just something that prevented us from moving backwards in our state. This bill that has been proposed will allow many members of the LGBTQIA community to grasp onto one aspect of equality. One that the community has been waiting for a long time. Personally, this bill will allow me to dream a little bit further into my future. Yes, I can dream about my life with my girlfriend, but this bill, if this bill is legalized, I can think of the possibility of having a wife that is recognized by the state. As a city employee that works hard to provide opportunities for many Minnesotan families and their children, I would love to have an equal opportunity to start my own family. I know AFSCME was a significant supporter of the Vote No campaign, and although they have not taken a stance yet, I, as an AFSCME member, stand in support of the marriage bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Benson. Next testifier, Robert Lawser and Dwayne Bandel. Subsequent to that will be John Patrick Green III. Members, I would note for the testifiers, please also, I think there's someone following around trying to ensure that you get signed in. The page is doing that. Please be responsive to that, either before you're testifying or subsequent you're testifying. We need to have everyone who testifies sign in. Thank you. Please introduce yourself and proceed for the record.
Mr. Chair and committee members, my name's Jim Lawser, and this is my husband, Dwayne Bandel. We own a house in the Kingfield neighborhood of South Minneapolis. We were married in Vancouver, British Columbia on July 19th, 2006, our 20th anniversary. Marriage equality has been the law in Canada since 2005. Our Canadian marriage is valid and recognized in 10 other countries and counting, including France later this year. In none of these countries has marriage equality created any problem. We want our marriage to be valid and recognized in our own state, the place where we live and pay taxes. We met in Rochester in 1986, and we've been together ever since. It's been amazing to us that until we told people we were getting married, very few understood the relationship. Until our marriage in 2006, people, including friends, family, coworkers, and neighbors, weren't really sure what we were. People thought we were business partners. Some people thought we were father and son. Once we were married, everybody got it. Because marriage is a term that's universally understood, and no term clearly defines the relationship between two people better.
In 2006, before our marriage, we mailed a letter to family and friends explaining why we had decided to get married in Canada. Here is part of what we said. We believe in a world of love, compassion, and mutual respect, a world free from fear, discrimination, and prejudice. We believe in a world where all individuals enjoy equal rights as well as equal responsibilities. We believe that we deserve exactly the same privileges as every other committed and loving couple, regardless of gender, race, religious preference, or sexual orientation. In the over 26 years that we have been together, we have faced a number of challenges. However, one challenge we faced showed the difference being a legally married couple or next of kin can make. In early spring of 2002, we decided to pay a lawyer to draft legal documents that would guarantee us certain rights that most straight couples take for granted. These rights include inheritance, durable power of attorney, and the right to make health care decisions for each other as stated in a health care directive. Since we are not legally married, we had to each pay the lawyer separately. Coincidentally, a few weeks after the papers were signed, I was rushed by ambulance to the hospital where I received an AIDS diagnosis. After a series of illnesses, near-death experience, and hospitalizations, doctor's visits, and medical tests, it was determined that I had probably been HIV positive since the mid-1980s. After my diagnosis and two hospitalizations, I spent the next 5 months at home recovering and working hard to regain my strength and weight. During my hospitalization and throughout my recovery, Jim was able to take sick time from his job to care for me only because his supervisor allowed it, not because she was legally obligated, since Jim is not my legal spouse. One thing we learned through all of this, if we hadn't paid the lawyer to obtain those documents, Jim would not have been able to be with me in the hospital or help me with my plans or decisions during recovery. In fact, the first day I was in the hospital near death, the doctors told Jim to go home and get the paperwork for my medical records.
Please conclude your testimony, Mr. Bendel.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Next testifier will be John Patrick Green, followed by Mr. Green will be Mr. David Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Hi, my name is John Green. I was raised in Matamidi. On April 1st, 1985, I was born into a family headed by two women. My grandparents were skeptical. Yet when they saw the love that radiated from the face of a healthy baby boy and his two beaming mothers, they had no choice but to believe. My mom's taught me about the history of our great state, our noble country, and the values of equality that form the country, and the values of equality that form the foundation of our democracy. The stories they read me each and every night illuminated the beautiful world we live in and unveiled the love that swells in every one of our souls. Our family isn't so different from any Minnesota family. At home, we enjoy family dinners, Sunday mornings at church, commiseration about the lackluster play of the Vikings. We talk about my search to find a woman who I can love as my parents have taught me to. But we have our difficulties too. We argue. We struggle to support a small family business. But as a loving family, we are equipped to handle these issues by ourselves. All we expect from the government is equal and fair treatment under the law. Marriage is about love, family, children. As a child of two women, I turned out all right. I captained two sports in high school, graduated from one of the most selective colleges in the country, and I have a 3.92 GPA and a grueling Master's of Architecture program at the University of Minnesota. If I were your son, committee members, I think I would make you very proud. I believe in the values that my parents taught me: tolerance, the inherent dignity of all human beings, equality, and freedom. It's time that the law of our state fully recognizes these values too. Let us take this opportunity to assert that all loving families deserve equal treatment under the law, that all children deserve the kind of childhood I experienced. It's not unusual. It's what happens in families that love each other. It just works. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Green. Next testifier will be David Patton. Followed by David Patton will be Chip Martin and Bill Chafee.
Mr. Chairman, I've given a photo to share with the committee.
Excellent. The page will please distribute the photo. Please introduce yourself for the record, Mr. Patton, and begin your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify. My name is David Patton, and I speak in support. I was here 2 years ago, and I'm back to remind all those folks who are worried about the children of gay parents, we're doing fine. Thank you. George and my dad have been together for over 30 years. They both had a hand in raising me. They taught me to watch out for others, to be kind. You'd be amazed to find out what gay dads can teach you about how to impress women. They taught me that the most important thing is creating memories with the people you love. We'd see theater and ballet and play games. We'd go on vacations. We'd eat frog legs and snails and sharks and all the grody things that boys like. They invested their time and their love in us. They gave us everything that parents should. That's what I want from my boy Anderson. A whole belly full of happy memories with his family. You know, as a kid, I never knew that George was my family. Back then, nobody ever told me that. In society's eyes, when two people marry, a family is created. My dad and George couldn't marry, and so our family didn't count. Today, my son calls George granddad, because we are family. I worry about the children in Minnesota who are wondering today if their family is a real family. I worry about my son, Anderson. And I worry that he's going to grow up, and he's going to fall in love, and somebody's going to tell him that his love and his family don't count. Pass this bill. Protect our children. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Patton. Next testifier is Chip Martin and Bill Chafee. Followed by that will be Professor Robert Oscar Lopez. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Chairman Lesh and members of the committee, my name is Chip Martin, and this is Bill Chafee. We both live in St. Cloud, Minnesota. Thank you very much for allowing us to testify in support of HF 1054 today. Bill and I have been in a loving and committed relationship for the last 8 years. 4 years ago, we adopted our daughter, Olivia, and 2 years later, our son, Landon, came along.
The adoption process was initially fearful, and we were unsure of the reaction to expect from our friends and family. Fortunately, as we began to let people know of our plans for adoption, support gathered behind us. We are continually amazed with the ease of how well we fit into virtually every aspect of our children's lives: preschool, our neighborhood, our church.
We feel incredible support from so many of our friends, family, and community members. We have realized there are many different types of normal families with parents who may be biological, adoptive, step, foster, grandparents, and other configurations that make up the adult in many thriving families. We are a family just like any other family, and no family is less deserving or less worthy than any other.
We're simply two adoptive parents in a suburban neighborhood, surrounded by liberals and conservatives who support us and our family. We're here today because our children deserve to have the same stability that marriage brings to all other families with legally married parents in our community.
I would very much one day like to answer Olivia's questions differently when she asked me, "Daddy Chip, are you and Daddy Bill married?"
No, Olivia, some people won't let us get married because they don't understand that we're a family. They don't understand that Daddy Chip and I love each other.
I cannot wait for the day that I can respond with something more like,
"We're planning on getting married real soon, just like Uncle Brandon and Auntie Erica did."
In Olivia's eyes, we are just like other families, and she simply cannot comprehend why we don't have the same rights as everyone else that she sees in her life.
We look forward to the day when we can walk down the aisle together and profess our love and commitment in front of God, family, and friends, with Olivia and Landon as our flower girl and ring bearer.
Mr. Chairman and members of this committee, thank you very much for allowing us the opportunity to speak with you today.
Thank you very much, Mr. Martin and Mr. Chafee. Next testifier, Professor Robert Oscar Lopez.
Thank you.
And after that will be Mr. Bill Chadwick.
Chairman, representatives, thank you. I've spent 40 years in the LGBT community because I was raised by a lesbian with the help of her female partner, and I came out as bisexual over 20 years ago. I'm also a humanities scholar with 15 years of experience as a professor, and I reject the notion that there is any consensus on any side about same-sex parenting in any academic discipline. Same-sex love and same-sex parenting same-sex parenting and same-sex marriage have been intertwined in this debate, and this places me in a conflict of conscience. I know that couples like my mother and her partner deserve to have their love recognized, but I also know as a child in that situation that there is something missing when you have a parent of one sex that is not there. I only have 2 minutes here and can't begin to address the many reasons that we need to slow down in the rush to same-sex marriage. Doug Mainwaring and I have founded the CEFA, or the Site for Ethical Family Alternatives, which we are launching to try to bring together LGBT voices from left and right to have the debate that has not taken place yet in the United States. We've heard a lot from religious objectors to homosexuality, and we've heard a lot from LGBT activists who feel that they have earned property rights to children through their activism. We have not heard from people on the left who are worried about the social justice concerns of international exploitation through surrogacy contracts with poor women in the third world. We haven't heard about 13th Amendment violations in the buying and selling of children to meet a market demand for same-sex couple parenting, or the social inequality that gay marriage may worsen among LGBTs ourselves. We have not heard enough from children's rights advocates about the full debate on whether a child has a right to a mother and a father, how or whether this law might encourage more divorce among fragile mixed orientation marriages that already exist, or the extent to which legalizing gay marriage may transform children from free citizens entrusted to those who conceived them into the property of adults who acquire them. So I say we need more time. There is no rush. I've been in the LGBT community for 40 years. We'll get by. We'll survive. Our relationships are doing, pretty well. Let's take time to really try to consider all of the different aspects of this before we rush into something that might have unintended consequences. And on unintended consequences, I just want to point out that I had to clean out a lot of apartments of people who died of AIDS. And in the 1970s, when people drastically changed sexual culture, they could not have foreseen that that disease was going to happen. So we have to ask, what are the unforeseen consequences of making a change this big? Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony, Professor Lopez. Next testifier, Mr. Bill Chadwick. And subsequent to Mr. Chadwick will be David Cobb.
Good morning, and thank you for the opportunity, Chairman Lesch and other representatives. Thank you for your good work on behalf of the state of Minnesota. I'm one of the million. I'm pastor of Oak Grove Presbyterian Church, Bill Chadwick. One of the millions of people of faith that over the years have changed our minds on this issue. I speak personally. My younger brother John and I were extremely close growing up. I was very excited when we started having kids. I didn't have any of my own. I loved being an uncle. Claire and Jim, his children, grew up in the church that I now serve. When Claire grew up, she married a wonderful young man 3 years ago. Jim is now a senior in college, but he will not be able to marry the one he loves. By the time he was 3 years old, I knew that Jim was gay. Jim didn't choose that. Current law, I've had the deep honor to officiate at the weddings of four of my nieces. Current state law infringes on my freedom of religion to officiate at Jim's marriage. One comic has said, "Let gays marry. Why shouldn't they be as miserable as the rest of us?" Well, that may or may not be a funny line, but most of the time I'm not miserable. My marriage means the world to me. My wife, Chris, and I are coming up on 25 years of marriage next month. And a civil union just wouldn't cut it for us. Our marriage is a place of safety, commitment, companionship, intimacy, trust. And those things all can happen without marriage, but our relationship is acknowledged, encouraged, and celebrated by the world. And why shouldn't Jim receive that same acknowledgement, encouragement, and celebration? Simply because of the way he was born. Marriage says we are family in a way that no other word does. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Chadwick, Mr. David Cobb, Spirit of Joy Christian Church. And subsequent to that will be Lynn Osterman. Not seeing Mr. Cobb approach, Lynn Osterman. Welcome to the committee, former Representative Osterman. Please introduce yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I apologize for my voice this morning. I'm suffering a cold. I'm Lynn Osterman from New Hope, and I thank you sincerely for the opportunity to be part of this discussion. When I was a sophomore in college, I set the goal to serve in the Minnesota House of Representatives. And when I got here thinking I was going to be a thoughtful citizen legislator, I was ill-prepared for the partisanship that greeted my class, the chair's class of 2002. I served as a Republican because of my interest in smaller government. And it was incredibly counterintuitive to me to then, upon my arrival, tell citizens how the government wanted them to live their lives. I didn't come to St. Paul to single out same-sex couples and their families, but in my only term as a member,
I cast a politically expedient vote in favor of DOMA, and I have regretted that ever since. It was not my conscience or my own compass. My dad is a retired Presbyterian minister. In fact, he served the congregation that Reverend Chadwick now serves. I've heard lots of Bible-based sermons over the years, and never once did I hear that someone else's love was somehow lesser than the love between my parents of now 55 years. My husband of almost 26 years and I have established and demonstrated our decision-making priorities with our two children, stressing people are more important. It's never been well except for those people. Nothing in my life says it's okay to treat people differently than how I would want to be treated, fairly, respectfully, equally. And that's really what this conversation is about. Whether you believe in big government or small, do you believe in fair, respectful, equal? Is it ever okay to say, well, except for those people? I feel like I'm at the Oscars. I see the red sign. Lawmakers before us, you, all over this nation have had conversations about equality, respectability, and fairness. We've all taken our history classes and could come up with our own lists of instances. What were the polls like for those issues? Was everyone ready when our elected officials took the reins and led our communities, state and nation, so those laws were changed? Voting no today, this session, might seem politically expedient. But I can tell you from experience that you will have to live knowing that a no vote is not fair, it's not respectful, and it's not equal. I blew my vote, and I'm imploring you, please get this right. Minnesota citizens just want you to lead.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Osterman. Thanks. Next testifier will be Gabe Aberhold, and subsequent to that will be Mr. Tom Horner.
Good morning, Chairman and the
rest of the committee. My name is Gabe Adderhold, and I'm a freshman at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities studying political science. Grew up in Edina, Minnesota. I'm here today to testify in support of the marriage equality legislation. Today you've heard a lot from both sides of the aisle, and people in support of marriage equality have stated why they believe it is in the best interest to pass this legislation. They've spoken primarily on the grounds of wanting to be in a loving, get the legal recognition of being in a loving, committed relationship. And I'd like to, as a person, a young person, that's not in one of those long-term relationships, give a different perspective. When I was in middle school, I knew there was something different about myself. I discovered that I was gay, and even though my family, my church, my community was completely accepting, I did not find this okay. I spent many nights very upset with myself and very troubled by this realization of mine. And over the years, I found out that if all these areas around me were so supportive, what was it? What was it that caused so much hardship? And it is what institutions like these and society as a whole have caused. And I am here to tell you that all of you have a responsibility on behalf of creating an inclusive, a smart, a supportive environment for GLBT youth like myself and the millions, well, thousands of others across the United States as well. It is just so important that not only does the marriage equality legislation allow for that legal benefits for gay and lesbian couples, but people like myself, it gives us the grounds of feeling good and feeling accepted in our society. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Aberhold. The final testifier for this morning will be Mr. Tom Horner. And members, we will recess and reconvene at 6 o'clock after Mr. Horner's testimony in this same room, in room 10. Mr. Horner, please introduce yourself for the record.
Fortunately, I'm accustomed to finishing last. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to join you today. My name is Tom Horner. Over my nearly 40-year career, I've had the good fortune to work closely with some of the most influential and thoughtful Minnesota business, community, and policy leaders. And while they differ in many ways, they all agree on two essential keys to the success of our state. First, they agree that Minnesota's greatest asset is our workforce. We have a population of well-educated, innovative, and productive people. And second, the growth in the working age population will remain flat for years to come. Economic growth depends on attracting and retaining the best and the brightest workers. Over the years, we have fared well in this competition for talent. Young, educated professionals from around the country have migrated to Minnesota because of the many assets we offer. Talented professionals came and stayed in Minnesota, though, for another reason. They found innovative employers who are among the nation's leaders in creating diverse, welcoming workplaces. In particular, gay and lesbian couples found a home in which they could prosper, raise families, and become part of a supportive community. Now, though, the bar has been raised. Respected business publications like The Economist report that companies are in serious competition to create welcoming environments. This isn't just to attract and retain gay and lesbian professionals. Compelling data have definitively concluded that communities with welcoming environments are most appealing to the majority of all young, well-educated professionals. Employers can only do so much. Public policy needs to catch up with public attitudes and public realities. Treating all Minnesotans equally by extending the freedom to marry to same-sex couples is the right thing to do. But it also is the smart thing to do as we build a state where all Minnesotans can prosper and all families can thrive. The legislation being discussed today will help do just that, and I urge you to support it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Horner. Members and members of the public, as stated, This committee will be in recess. We will reconvene at 6 o'clock. Unfortunately, there are limited seats in this room at 6 o'clock, so members who are scheduled to testify at 6 o'clock, the remaining members of the public will be allowed tickets for the room, and then the remaining tickets will be parceled out on a first-come, first-served basis. Thank you very much. The committee is in recess. Chair calls the House Civil Law Committee back into order. Members, before we begin testimony, I'd like to notify the audience that there will be members of the committee who will be exiting and entering the committee room today because there are other bills and other committees going on at the same time. And you should in no way consider this a reflection of how important they feel this bill is. So please be patient with members and also note that they are listening to testimony, and if they're gone, that doesn't mean they don't care. They just have other bills to vote on. So beginning where we left off, the next testifier I have listed is Dale Carpenter.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before I forget, I want to request a roll call. And then are you taking comments at all right now, or are you going to wait until the testifiers are done?
I do intend to wait for committee member debate until after the testifiers have completed.
All right, very good. Thank you.
And after Mr. Dale Carpenter, who will be Grace Fink. After Grace Fink will be Pauline Nixon.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Clark.
Mr. Carpenter doesn't wish to testify necessarily at this time. He's a resource that's available, but he doesn't want to make a statement at this particular time. Doesn't
okay,
to do that.
Thank you. So the next testifier will be Grace Fink. Is Grace Fink here? Ms. Fink, please take a seat, state your name, and identify yourself for the record. Proceed with your testimony, reminding members that testifiers are allotted 2 minutes. We will hold up a yellow card when you have 15 seconds left, and we will hold up a red card when your testimony should complete. Please respect that for the committee. Thank you. Please proceed.
Hello, my name is Grace Fink. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members, for allowing me to be here today. I am standing here because marriage between a man and a woman is extremely important to me. I would like to begin by asking you a question. What does a good and stable society mean? For me, a good and stable society is one that protects and encourages the people to live up to their fullest potential. When I look around at our society, I see certain social institutions which greatly impact us. For example, the government and military systems are both social institutions which serve the people in important ways. Keeping this in mind, we must not forget that marriage between a man and a woman is also a social institution. The United States Supreme Court has said that marriage is fundamental to the very existence and survival of the human race. This is why the government is involved in the marriage debate, because it is a time-tested institution which is of utmost importance to our society. Traditional marriage is the most pro-child institution ever created. Some of the benefits children receive from traditional marriage are reduced poverty and material hardship, increased likelihood of completing high school, college, and achieving high-status jobs, better physical health, less depression, fewer suicides, an increased likelihood of good relationships, and reduced rates of criminal behavior and child abuse. The overwhelming body of social science evidence establishes that children do best when raised by their married mother and father. Whether talking about poverty rates, physical and mental health, education attainment, or general happiness, science shows that children are better when raised in an intact home by their married parents. If we redefine marriage as genderless, what effect will this have on our children? What good architect would tweak the design of a major building before first testing the new design? The same goes for marriage. We cannot tweak the definition of marriage when the future generations are at stake. In conclusion, I would like to sincerely thank each and every one of you for listening to me today.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Fink. Next testifier, Pauline Nixon, followed by Pauline Nixon will be Annie Kopacik.
I have copies of my testimony.
The page will please distribute copies of Ms. Nixon's testimony.
Chairman Lesh, members of the Civil Law Committee, thank you for this opportunity to speak to you about House File 1054, the bill to allow same-gender marriage. My name is Pauline Nixon. My daughter, Dr. Andrea Nixon, is my middle child and a lesbian. In 2008, she and her partner of many years, Paula Lackey, eloped to San Francisco. Andrea's degree is in the administration of higher education. When she was finishing her doctoral degree, she was asked if she would like to design a position for herself in the dean's office at Carleton College, where she's worked for about 20 years. She agreed to do so and is now a lecturer and a researcher at Carleton. Prior to finishing her doctoral degree at the University of Minnesota, Andrea received a master's degree in computer science online from George Washington University. Sunday, 2 days ago, I asked Andrea what she thought I should say in my testimony today. She responded with two sentences. She was quite on target. She said, "People want to be able to care for one another, and people need equal means to do that." That's exactly what you will be allowing if you pass House File 1054. And that's my request of you. Please pass House File 1054. Not everyone can afford to go halfway across the continent to get married, as Andrea and Paula did. Finally, something very important. Nothing in this bill prohibits any religious association, religious corporation, or religious society that is not organized for private property from taking any action with respect to the provision of goods, services, facilities, or accommodations directly related to the solemnization or celebration of a marriage that's in violation of its religious beliefs. And thank you very much for hearing me.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Nixon. Next testifier, Annie Kopacek. The next testifier after this will be Michael Bailey. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Annie Kopacek, and thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and committee members, for hearing me today. I am a recent University of St. Thomas graduate and founder of the Organization of Students for Marriage at the St. Thomas campus. I urge you, please do not redefine marriage because you think that the youth does not support marriage between one man and one woman. I assure you that I speak not only for so many St. Thomas students, but also for other countless young people who know how marriage, and specifically the distinct roles of both mothers and fathers within marriage, affects children and society. If you strip gender from the state's definition of marriage, you effectively say to me that within the context of marriage, my unique gift of self as a woman, as a potential wife and mother, have no difference in that of a man. It is precisely because I am a woman and I have a unique gift to offer the world as a woman that marriage cannot and should not be legally deemed genderless. As a young single woman hoping to one day raise a family, I implore you not to use public policy to, in effect, regard my feminine gift or another's masculine gift as interchangeable. Do not esteem the unique place of a mother or a father within family life as insignificant to my potential children and grandchildren. It is insulting to the very dignity of every one of us, regardless of marital state in life or sexual orientation, to erase any acknowledgement of our most basic contributions to the well-being and growth of our communities. It is vital to the flourishing of society that, when it comes to marriage, our laws reflect the dignity of our personhood as male and female, and in that way secure a more stable future for our children. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Kopacek. Next testifier, Michael Bailey, followed by Brett Stevens.
Hello, I think I have an expanded version of my notes that I also think are being distributed.
Thank you. The page is distributing those now.
Thanks. And I also should note that I'm here representing Catholics for Marriage Equality Minnesota.
Please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you.
Did you introduce yourself for the record, Mr. Bailey?
No. My name is Michael Bailey, and I'm Executive Coordinator of Catholics for Marriage Equality, Minnesota.
Thank you. Please proceed.
I'm here in this capacity to take the opportunity to clarify the oft-quoted statement that the Catholic Church opposes same-sex marriage. This is only true if we limit the Church to its clerical leadership. In reality, however, this leadership does not encompass the totality of the Church, nor does it speak for all Catholics on this issue. Credible polls show that over two-thirds of Catholics support marriage equality. In fact, U.S. Catholics support gay marriage by a larger margin than the general public. As a Catholic, I welcome this reality and its grounding in the best aspects of the Catholic faith and in the Catholic people's experience and acceptance of their gay children, siblings, parents, neighbors, and co-workers. I take heart in the role that Catholics are playing so as to advance compassion and justice in our society. I want to assure you as lawmakers that the majority of Catholics do not support the Catholic hierarchy imposing its understanding of sexuality and marriage onto wider society. This is especially true when one acknowledges that the bishop's understanding of these realities is out of step with two important sources of truth in the Catholic tradition. They are the collective wisdom of the Catholic people and the insights provided by Catholic theologians. Catholics are not in theory opposed to the bishops making statements on important social issues, but we know that their speaking out should always seek to expand the circle of welcome and inclusion. This is not the case with their activism around marriage equality, and for many Catholics this is a source of pain and scandal. In conclusion, I want to assure you that the majority of Catholics would see the passing of marriage equality legislation as being in keeping with our Church's call for individuals and institutions to embody justice and compassion. The majority would support the passing of House File 1054. I hope you won't disappoint them. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Bailey. Next testifier, Brett Stevens, followed by Jacob Melson. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Brett Stevens, and while I'm a columnist at Lavender Magazine, I am testifying solely as a private citizen. My partner Randy and I have been together for 15 years. We believe our relationship deserves recognition by the state of Minnesota. There are thousands of same-sex couples like us throughout the state, and the time has come for our state government to respect our lives and relationships. Let me explain what I mean. We organize and order our lives together just like straight married couples do. We plan our retirement. We take care of each other. If one goes to school, the other works more. If one stays home to take care of the children, the other may pick up another job to make ends meet. As a result, our financial lives are intertwined and our plans are joint. We need the state to recognize these realities. It is because this issue is so important and so compelling, we cannot wait and see if same-sex marriage will pass. The Minnesota poll that came out last week showed 53% of the public doesn't support same-sex marriage. Speaker Thiessen and Majority Leader Bach have both repeatedly said they doubt it can pass. It's time to believe them and face the truth. These past 4 months of interviewing people, studying polls, researching strategies, and the past histories of political movements has brought me to one conclusion. It is time for a compromise so our relationships get the recognition and the respect they deserve. We need someone to propose a civil union bill. I have talked with people from both sides of this issue for the past few months, and I've come to a realization. Reasonable people can disagree on this issue, and reasonable people can come to an agreement. There are those who believe marriage is only between a man and a woman. There are those who believe gender is irrelevant. I think the people of Minnesota are ready to say our relationships matter, but so do our traditions. Same-sex couples should be recognized, and we can do it with civil union legislation. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Stevens. Also, if the testifiers would please remember to sign in. The page is working diligently to ensure that all testifiers are on the record. That is the rules of the House and rules of this committee, so please do sign in before or after you testify. The next testifier is Jacob Melson, followed by Daniel Dobson. Mr. Melson. Daniel Dobson. Is Daniel Dobson here? Next testifier, Kirk Allen Dement. After Mr. Dement will be Neil Tao. Mr. Tao, you're after Mr. Dement. Have a seat. Make sure you sign in. Mr. Dement, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Kirk Allen Dement, and I'd like to say that I've been following the conversations for the past 2 years and looking for a legitimate reason, a secular reason for why same-sex marriage would be denied. And what I found over the last 2 years is that it breaks down to two areas, children and society. So what I did is I looked at those organizations in our society that have unique expertise in the area of child development, human social systems, both past and present. And what I found to a T, these organizations, professional organizations, have come out in support of same-sex marriage or equal parenting rights for gay or lesbian couples. And I'd like to list some of these organizations that I found: the American Psychological Association, the American Psychiatric Association, American Sociological Association, the American Anthropological Association, the American Academy of Family Physicians, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, American Medical Association, the Child Welfare League of America, the North American Council on Adoptable Children. These groups are respected, authoritative groups in our society, and I could not find one group that had the comparable authority that opposed same-sex marriage. And this is really telling when people quote research, that these groups that are from the medical, psychological, psychiatric fields, etc., come out in support of same-sex marriage. I believe that if legislators cannot find a legitimate secular reason for denying same-sex marriage, which I am confident there is not one that has been presented, that you swiftly act to legalize same-sex marriage, because justice delayed is justice denied. And I'd also like to mention, too, when research is done, talked about in terms of traditional parenting, it's comparing kids to parents that traditional marriages with single-parent families and cohabitating heterosexual couples and not same-sex couples. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Dement. Neil Tao.
Hi, John. Sok sabai. Chào bạn, bien osti, bonsoir tout le monde, and good evening, Mr. Chair, member of the committee. I'm Neil Tao, committee leader from the Hmong community. I'm a professor at Metropolitan State University. I'm a father of four children. I'm here to testify to support this bill. Let me tell you that as an immigrant, a lot of them don't speak English well, but they too support my view that this is a good bill. Let me remind you, I was a refugee from Laos and a member of the Hill tribe named Hmong. A minority of the minority. I understand the term minority, disadvantage, disfranchised, and at times feel unwelcoming. So let me tell you that I'm very proud of Minnesota. The Minnesota is the first state to elect a Hmong woman to office in 1991 for St. Paul Public School Board, Chua Lee. And of course, me more for Minnesota's first Hmong American state legislator in 2001. I want to make sure that Minnesota do not let behind a lot of Hmong men, a lot of Hmong and immigrant GLBT member for equal opportunity, equal protection, and fairness. This is a beautiful state. They give us, the immigrant, a lot of opportunity. I want to make sure that taxpayer, Hmong, or immigrant GLBT have the same protection, the same equality, We're here to build our life. We're here to enjoy our life. We're here to be a productive citizen. Thank you, Mr. Chair and member of the committee.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Tao. Next testifier will be Don Portwood. After Don Portwood will be August Berkshire. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Don Portwood. I was born and raised in a conservative farming community in Nebraska. My wife and I will be celebrating our 40th wedding anniversary in 2 months. I am pastor of Lyndale United Church of Christ in Minneapolis. In 2006, Lyndale Church was the first church in Minnesota to vote as a congregation to stop doing civil weddings. For the last 8 years, I've only done blessing ceremonies for straight and gay couples. I no longer participate in what I feel is an unjust policy of the state, so I no longer sign wedding licenses on behalf of the state. Instead, on behalf of my church, we bless all couples in the eyes of God. A straight couple has to get a wedding license at the county. If, as a Christian or person of faith, you disagree with what we did, we should sit down and have a Bible study and talk about why we believe our decision was being faithful to the God we know through Jesus Christ. But that discussion of beliefs should not be taking place here. My hope would be that the state would legally wed people, issue licenses to all couples, and then if a couple wanted to have a blessing ceremony and knew a church, synagogue, or mosque that would bless them, they would do the religious ceremony. For the people who fear changing the tradition of marriage as they know it, I invite you to trust and open to the possibility that God's Spirit is moving today, just like it moved in the Apostle Peter in Acts 10, beyond the scripture, traditions, and understanding he'd grown up with. Same-gender couples are having blessing ceremonies, and they are having children. That will happen whether this law is passed or not. Being Nebraska-raised, I think I'm pretty conservative. I'm for supporting monogamy. I'm for the state providing support in all the ways it does for all couples and their families, like my wife and our love and our commitment has been supported for nearly 40 years. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Pastor Portwood. Next testifier, August Berkshire, followed by Simon Radecki. Please introduce yourself for the record and begin your testimony, Mr. Berkshire.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is August Berkshire, and I'm here to represent Minnesota Atheists. We're the state's oldest, largest, and most active atheist organization. We view this as a matter of separation of church and state. It can be confusing because the same word, marriage, is used for both a civil contract and a religious ceremony. But we must keep in mind that these are two separate things. Today, you may hear testimony from some people saying that their God is in favor of same-sex marriage, and you may hear testimony from other people saying that their God is opposed to same-sex marriage. But fortunately, that's not a debate that you have to resolve. Government laws must have a secular basis. The best secular arguments in favor of same-sex marriage are the 14th Amendment's guarantee of equal protection under the law, and the fact that long-term relationships, whether they're gay or straight, help to stabilize society. In our opinion, there are no secular arguments against same-sex marriage that hold up to scrutiny. Many of these arguments were used 50 years ago to oppose interracial marriage. I'd like to end on a personal note. My partner, Rachel, and I are heterosexuals, and we've been together for 17 years. We're both atheists, so we won't be getting married in a church or synagogue or temple or mosque. Instead, we'll seek a judge to perform a civil marriage ceremony. However, we won't get married until it's legal for everyone. Because how can we stand up in front of our family and friends, some of whom happen to be gay, on what is supposed to be the happiest day of our lives, knowing that that happiness is not available to them as well. So please pass this pro-marriage bill and make civil marriage available to everyone. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Berkshire. Simon Radecki. Next testifier after Simon Radecki will be Jenny Hay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Simon Radecki. I'd like to say that all the way up one side of my family tree, they voted conservative Republican every year. On my other side of the family tree, they voted half conservative Republican every year. But for some reason, my non-biological mother had to every day make sure that as she was going to work that she had power of attorney and everything on her person so that if the worst happened that she would be able to go into the hospital and take care of my brother and I. I was overjoyed this past election cycle, but I was more overjoyed this Thanksgiving. We go to my ancestral home, you could say, in Indiana, where my grandfather lives, and he had some new neighbors over. We had a big Thanksgiving dinner like we usually do, and he invited the new neighbors over to dinner. And for the first time in my life, my biological mother introduced Lee, my other mother, as her wife. And for me, that was an extremely powerful experience because it's the culmination of a relationship that has existed for 25 years. They put two kids through college, and they provided for us with the loving care and commitment and long-term relationship that many heterosexual couples enjoy. I am extremely fortunate to have been raised in a community that was very accepting, that was very friendly, and I'd like to say on behalf of all those younger than me or those that live in communities that are not so accepting, those kids would really, really appreciate the passage of this bill. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Radecki. Next testifier, Jenny Haig, followed by Bob Minton.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to share my story. My name is Jenny Haig, and I live in St. Paul with my partner Aileen and our family, and we live in the same neighborhood, the Catholic neighborhood that I grew up in. In 2009, I was diagnosed with a rare form of bone cancer. My son was 3 and Aileen a law student. I found myself in a halo, unable to work or care for my own basic needs such as combing my hair or bathing. I had 2 10-hour surgeries, radiation therapy in Boston, nearly a year of therapy and a feeding tube, and a neck rebuilt out of titanium. During this time, Aileen was a full-time law student and amazing caretaker to my son and I. I remember her writing her long paper on a rolling table in the hospital next to me and sleeping on a folding chair in the ICU. Family and friends showed their support by cooking meals, babysitting, cleaning, and even offering their homes to us. The Minnesotan values of supporting family and treating each other with respect were practiced daily, and these are values that are consistent with this bill. Aileen and I have taken precautions to protect our family in case I'm not here to do the protecting myself. Unfortunately, a will, a trust, and a health care directive don't offer the same protections as marriage. Many of you here, like me, have probably spent nights awake worrying about your kids or loved ones. Legal rights are not going to solve all of our worries, but they offer a structure that we can rely on when the goodwill of others is not enough in the face of the law. Marriage equality recognizes that the commitment, the love, and the struggles my family have faced are similar to yours and your families, and we deserve the same support. Please choose marriage equality for all families. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Haig. Next testifier is Bob Minton, followed by Richard Painter.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Bob Minton, and I'm chair of Former Priests for Marriage Equality. Last year, on May 17th, our group released a statement to the media opposing that proposed marriage amendment. Upon release, that statement had signatures of 80 former priests. And after the release, we gathered more names for a total of 103 names. This year, we have a follow-up statement that has been emailed to you, and I guess it's distributed also to you. This statement supports legislation that affords everyone the same benefits, rights, and duties when they contract marriage in the state of Minnesota. 82 former priests from Minnesota signed this statement, and collectively, they devoted more than 1,000 years of service to their church. We support this bill, and we are pleased that it does not infringe on the rights of some churches or members of the clergy to deny their marriage rights to same-sex couples. Our fellow former priests found arguments against this bill wanting and unconvincing. And as our statement proclaims, we believe that state law should allow every individual the freedom to marry the person he or she loves. To that end, we, 82 former priests, call upon all members of the Minnesota House and Senate to pass this legislation during this current session. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Minton. Next testifier, Richard Painter, followed by Anthony Newby. I'm sorry, Christine Lindblom will be the next testifier after Mr. Painter. Go ahead, Mr. Painter. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I thank you for inviting me to testify here today. 6 years ago, my wife and I moved here to Minnesota with our three children. We live in Edina. I moved here after finishing 2.5 years of service as the chief White House ethics lawyer and associate counsel to the president for President George W. Bush. I was thrilled last week to help found an organization called Republicans United for Freedom, and I will be chairing that organization starting this week. Republicans United for Freedom is committed to the ideals that we believe have been held by the Republican Party for many years, from the first Republican president, Abraham Lincoln, to the last Republican vice president, Richard Cheney. And in Mr. Cheney's words, freedom means freedom for everyone. And that is what this bill is all about. The freedom to marry should be available for everyone. There are certain things that are none of the government's business, and I would be happy to list other things in other testimony. But who you marry is certainly none of the government's business. This is a matter to be resolved between loving individuals and their churches, their synagogues, their community. It is not a matter for the government to decide who is entitled to love who. And this bill should pass. It is the right thing to do. I have signed on to a brief submitted to the United States Supreme Court with 130 other Republicans, including Clint Eastwood, and also some of my former colleagues from the White House, urging marriage equality. And let me just say one thing about religious freedom. I was active in the White House Christian Fellowship when I was there in Washington. I'm a member of the Episcopal Church, and I want to ask you, what about our religious freedom, those of us who belong to denominations that want to celebrate same-sex marriages? Is that being recognized in this state? Please pass this bill.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Painter. Next testifier, Kirsten Lindblom.
Good evening. Thank you, Chairman Lesh and members of the committee. My name is Kirsten Lindblom. 5 years ago in a little church in Austin, Minnesota, in front of 140 members of our family and friends. My partner Ginny and I made a lifelong commitment to one another. We decided that we wanted to make that public declaration of love, even though the state would not recognize it. At the time, we talked a lot about the options, but we felt that we wanted to have a ceremony in our community, in the space and place that we live and that we work. From that day, the hope has been that the state would one day make it possible for us and thousands of other couples to become legally married. 3 years ago, my Ginny was diagnosed with cancer. It's the slow-growing and deadly kind. She's beating the odds. She's pushing back the clock, but every day she's fighting for time. During the height of her illness, our marriage hope disappeared. In November 2012, we celebrated the passing of Ginny's expected expiration date and the defeat of the marriage amendment. Ginny continues to fight, and with the shift in Minnesota's political climate, our marriage hope has returned. As a woman facing the loss of her wealth, loss of her wife, I'm compelled. I am driven and I am determined to make the dreams that she dreams come true, and our one-day marriage is one of those dreams. Even though she's pushing back the clock, eventually cancer will take my wife. I have a student who wears a t-shirt that says that love holds no bounds, and I agree. But the greatest expression of love, marriage, is being held in bondage. It is bound, and you have the power to release it. You have the power to make Ginny's dream come true, and that's something that I so wish that I had. What a gift you hold. Please, send the Freedom to Marry bill to vote for my Ginny, for me, and for the thousands upon thousands of others who long to see their marriage dreams come true. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Lynn Bloom. Members, that concludes the names on the list for public testimony on House File 1054 as amended. This is now the time for discussion among committee members. After all the comments from members of the committee on House File 1054 are exhausted, we will take a vote. A roll call has already been requested. Comments from members of the committee. Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we weren't able to have any discussion around the A1 amendment. And I'm just curious what the deleted language on page 4, what the intent of that was, and why the decision to delete it.
Representative Clark.
Madam Chair, we did discuss it briefly, but I was just thinking I might maybe a call for the person who's been working with me on that. Well, actually, I think Representative Simon, that was you who worked on that, wasn't it?
Representative Simon.
Representative Holberg, the language was probably a little bit too broad and could have been more specific. There are a lot of different subject matters that this might apply to, and the best approach, at least from my standpoint, would be to go over this subject matter by subject matter, probably in some future bill. But breadth is the primary reason.
Representative Holbert.
Mr. Chair, I'm still not clear what you were trying to protect, or what were you trying to carve out or accomplish that I'm not even understanding what the intent of the language was in the first place, let alone
Representative Simon.
It was nuanced in the right way.
Sure. Yeah, as I understand the language, what it would say is that if there's some way that the federal government qualifies or describes marriage, then the state would construe that to mean treating spouses of the same sex in the manner of spouses of opposite sexes, line 4.10, 4.11. I guess the problem is breadth in the sense that, as you imply, this doesn't refer to any specific subject matter, benefits, taxation, spending, anything like that, and it's better to take care of those in more of a pinpoint kind of fashion than it is to just broadly say that wherever there's a conflict, no matter where it might be, this language applies. It's too broad.
Representative Holbert.
All right. I appreciate the information because I wasn't even sure exactly. I mean, it read to me that no matter what the feds decided in Minnesota, marriage would be what we say, and I'm not so sure we even have the authority to do that, but
is that it, Representative Holbert? I think Representative Simon, do you have anything else? Any other comments? Okay.
I think maybe Representative Yaruso is trying.
Representative Yaruso?
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to comment that since what the amendment does is delete that whole bit, then we really don't need to quibble about what the whole bit would have done because it's not there anymore.
Well,
Representative Holberg.
That's okay. It's been a long day, Mr.
It has
Chair.
Been, Representative Holberg.
I was just trying to understand the language and if it comes back in some other form what the original intent was. So it's, words matter around here. And I had, if I might...
Go ahead, Representative Holberg.
The other thing that I'm struggling with, and I, believe it or not, spent a couple hours this afternoon actually watching the Senate hearing on this bill, and I know, I'm sorry, but maybe raised more questions. But there was quite a discussion around the Minnesota Human Rights Act and the strength of that, and there were concerns expressed about if an individual's religious belief was one that did not support a same-sex marriage. And in the bill as written, we have a carve-out for nonprofits. But what the ramifications were for, say, business owners that provided services, we have heard testimony, at least the Senate did today, and there's been stories in the news of, say, a company that provides a catering service or a floral service. Under the Minnesota Human Rights Act, what would be their rights for religious objection should this bill pass?
Representative Clark?
Mr. Chair, maybe I'll start by saying that this bill doesn't expand or contract in any way the protections that are already in the Minnesota Human Rights Act. So those discussion, I was there for part of the Senate hearing, too. I didn't hear it all. But I think the answer over and over was, you know, what we're talking about in this bill has to do with marriage, not with any changes to the existing protections against discrimination for businesses or the religious exemptions for religious organizations that are in the Minnesota Human Rights Act. Those are intact. We're not changing that. So a lot of that discussion was kind of about an issue that really isn't before us. What we're really talking about here is the marriage, a change to the meaning of marriage, not to the Minnesota Human Rights Act.
And, Mr. Chair, I understand that, but as I listened to the testimony and looked at the language of the bill, if it was true that nothing changed and religious protections were still the same, then the language regarding the nonprofits in the bill would not be necessary either. And so I'm trying to have a better understanding of, we have language in the bill for nonprofits. I think it's trying to get at the church issue, private schools, et cetera. And so if under the current Minnesota Human Rights Act, those organizations have protections for religious freedom, if you will, then why the need for that language? I don't have a clear understanding of, if we need this language for nonprofits, where does the for-profit sector of the state stand relative to being able to assert a religious objection to providing a service in the marketplace? Or do they have no standing to do that?
Representative Clark.
Mr. Chair, and I'll answer the best I can, and then maybe we could ask for one of our lawyerly persons to explain a little bit more. But here's my understanding. Again, the Minnesota Human Rights Law, the existing law right now, does tell us what for-profit businesses, and that's what you're asking about, can or cannot do. That's not changed. What we are doing by adding this language here is just to, I think, be really, really clear about the religious exemptions and what it covers. And that was, there's two places where that happens, and that was done on the relationship to the law, rules of construction, religious freedom, the Human Rights Act, and we also did it on the part that you just mentioned, and the refusal to solemnize. Protecting the right of religious organizations not to have to marry, right. If that's the interest. So, maybe I should ask maybe one of our people who have crafted this language. I wonder, Mr. Carpenter.
And Mr.
Representative Holberg.
Representative Clark, I understand that we're not changing the Human Rights Act, but we are changing the definition of marriage. And so that adds a different question. If you are, say, in the case of Vermont, somebody that provides catering services for wedding receptions, or the case of the florist, right now that issue isn't before them because there isn't a marriage that they have a religious objection to having legal status in Minnesota. That right now. So that's not a situation that presents themselves to a for-profit Minnesota business person. If the bill is passed, we change the definition of marriage, and as everyone in this room is very aware, there are some very deeply held religious beliefs around definition of marriage. In the Senate, there was an imam that testified. The structure of the Senate hearing was quite a bit different, but a number of people testified about deeply held religious beliefs that I think have some protection in the Human Rights Act of Minnesota. But if you could talk a little bit to the extent or not that extends to the public marketplace.
Representative Clark?
Well, I'll just say my understanding is that if a business is offering a public service right now under the Minnesota Human Rights Act, if they're offering a business product, they are not allowed to discriminate on a number of bases: race, religion, age, disability, gender, sexual orientation, and status according to public assistance. So those things continue to be prohibited by any business in the marketplace. So we haven't changed that.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Holberg,
I understand that. I mean, I know that if this bill passes and I'm an employer and if I don't want to offer insurance benefits to same-sex couples, I'd have to remove insurance benefits for all employees because you can't discriminate. It's either all in or all out. I'm talking about providing a service relative to the marriage event in which I say, I have a religious objection to same-sex marriage. And as such, I don't want to prepare flowers, or I don't want to cater an event, or I don't want to be the photographer. We heard testimony in the Senate about another example was medical, offering a medical treatment. Now, that's not directly related to the marriage ceremony itself, but various professionals that have a deeply held religious conviction that does not support same-sex marriage, are they able to assert that religious objection and refuse a service related to same-sex marriage and have protections under the Human Rights Act of the state of Minnesota?
I tried to explain it, but I don't think I explained it very well, so maybe I can ask Mr. Carpenter
Chair, I think I'm trying to maybe get Mr. Carpenter
to Mr. Carpenter, please introduce yourself for the record.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Dale Carpenter, and I teach at the University of Minnesota Law School, constitutional law, and the First Amendment, including religious freedom. So it's an issue of great importance to me. The marriage bill that you have in front of you today does not provide a cause of action of any kind for a person based on the fact that they have just been married. There is no provision in the bill for enforcement or remedies or anything like that for discrimination. So to the extent there is any legal liability, it would have to come out of the Minnesota Human Rights Act, which in one form or another, as you know, has existed for many decades. About 20 years ago, we added sexual orientation. So that's where we start. And then the analysis under the Act would start with what sorts of entities are covered, in what situations are those entities liable legally for various kinds of discrimination, what kind of discrimination is it, and then even if you pass all of those tests, you have to ask questions about whether there are exemptions for that particular kind of entity. And the Minnesota religious freedom exemptions are among the most generous in the country in an anti-discrimination law. What's interesting about that, and it can be a very complicated discussion, obviously, what's interesting about that discussion is none of it is affected in any way by the marriage bill. So that, for example, a couple who is simply having a commitment ceremony could go to the wedding photographer today or to the cake baker and be refused a service and potentially have a claim under the Minnesota Human Rights Act. The fact that they're married or not doesn't make a difference to the outcome of their lawsuit under the Human Rights Act. The analogy that I would draw is to the New Mexico wedding photographer's case, which you may have heard about. In that case, of course, New Mexico has no recognition of same-sex marriage. And there was a claim that a photographer refused to photograph a commitment ceremony for a same-sex couple. They sued under the New Mexico law, and that is still being worked out in the courts in New Mexico. It's a very complicated issue. The most direct precedent we have on point about this particular question that I think you're asking about those who are in the for-profit business, so we're not talking about religious entities or nonprofit religious entities, but in the for-profit world who have religious and other objections to various services, is probably a case called McClure versus Sports and Health Club, which was decided by the Minnesota Supreme Court in 1985, before we had sexual orientation coverage in the state. And in that case, the Minnesota Supreme Court, held that the sincerely held religious beliefs of the owners of a place of public accommodation did not permit them to disregard the requirements of the Minnesota Human Rights Act once they chose to enter the marketplace. That's been the law in Minnesota now for going on something at like 30 years, at least according to the Minnesota Supreme Court. That's not affected one way or another by this bill.
Mr. Holbert.
Mr. Chair, I think it is in that you're changing the definition of marriage that may be contrary to some people's religious beliefs. I mean, the underlying issues, I agree, aren't changed by this, but... So is it fair then to surmise you could have a situation where you have two parties in a lawsuit in the state of Minnesota, both asserting protections under the Human Rights Act, one being the right to marry, Human Rights Act, one being the right to marry under a sexual orientation, and one being religious, deeply held religious belief, and that they then having to sort those out?
Professor Carpenter.
Yes. Those kinds of conflicts have come up in other states in the country where there's a claim under a state human rights law that there's been discrimination. The defendants defend with some exemption in the state law. Barring that, they defend with a constitutional protection claim, and those are being worked out. I've actually filed a brief in the New Mexico photographer's case supporting the religious freedom of this wedding photographer against probably what some of my allies would prefer, but that's what I've done. But Minnesota law stands on its own base. There are constitutional freedoms. They have not generally applied to for-profit businesses, although I've argued that in some cases they probably should. That'd probably be a subject for a very long and interesting constitutional law seminar. But it's not something that this bill resolves either way. I take your point that we're talking about marriage and a status that has implications under some 500 statutes in Minnesota. That's definitely the case. Those provisions in Minnesota law, however, provide rights for individuals as against their government, not as against private entities. And this bill seeks to make it clear that citizens in Minnesota, if they make the commitment to each other as against their government, cannot be discriminated against on this basis.
Representative Holbert.
If I might. Can you then... explain maybe with some greater detail than we've heard thus far, if in fact you believe that there are already these protections for religious freedoms, why the language in the bill, spelling out the nonprofits. Why the necessity for that?
Professor Carpenter.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe there are about four different places in the bill where there's some discussion of religious exemptions or freedom, depending on how you count the provisions. I believe those provisions do one of two things, and in some cases both things. Either they reaffirm that nothing has been changed by in existing law and in protecting religious freedom in this bill, or they to some extent make it even clearer, or you could say even expand to some extent the degree of religious freedom that's provided in the bill to make it absolutely clear that with respect to ceremonies, for example, there will be no requirement that religious institutions provide provide their facilities, their faith is protected, and so on. If there was any doubt about that, we wanted to make sure that I think the authors of the bill wanted to make sure that that was clear. So I think it was a matter of clarity and reaffirmation.
Okay. Representative Holberg.
Mr. Chair, I'll defer to others for a while here.
Thank you. Other comments from members? Representative Scott.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And this has been, thank you for conducting a fair hearing, Mr. Chair. And I want to say that, you know, I'm disappointed that we're even taking up this divisive issue and we don't have the budgets done here. And this is an issue that is very divisive, as we've heard testimony today. And additionally, the people of Minnesota were told this past fall and summer that if a no vote would mean that there would be no change in the statute, and here we sit trying to change the statute. And also in light of the recent polling with the Star Tribune that barely a third of the people in the state of Minnesota are in favor of changing the statute, I'm troubled that we're here at all, but I just want to thank you again for running a very, very fair hearing. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Scott. What was it? Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I echo the sentiments of Representative Scott here. I spent my afternoon, for those that don't know, I'm a freshman, and I'm new to this this committee, and it's a privilege to serve here. I wanted to be up to speed on this whole issue. So I spent my afternoon watching civil law tapes from 2 years ago and Ways and Means tapes on this exact argument when it was the constitutional amendment was being forwarded. And I want to echo some sentiments here, and I'm trying to understand this. At the time, we had some very senior members whom are on this committee that I respect. I really do. If you go back to May 2nd, 2011, House File 1613, watch the tapes, especially the last 30 minutes. You can reference what I'm talking about here. But at that point, we were trying to, through House File 1613, trying to further define marriage. And the comments that were made from people that I highly respect were wasting our time on this when we should be solving the budget issue. From another member who I highly respect at the same hearing said, instead of balancing the state budget, we're having meetings on constitutional amendments. When I went to the Ways and Means Committee, watched that, there were three other very senior members who expressed the exact same sentiments. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get a basic understanding as to why is it different this time. This legislature is facing a budget, a lack thereof. We haven't even begun to address that, and yet we're now trying to wrestle through a very distinctive change in the very fundamental fabric of our society, yet we haven't even I'm just going to take and put it on I'm going to take and just put it strictly from 2 years ago what the argument was. So if we haven't even begun to tackle our budget issues, why is this at the forefront? And I just echo the the words from the senior members from this committee who convinced me that the budget was a priority. You won that argument in my mind, so I sit here 2 years later after listening to some very well-crafted and very fine arguments, trying to figure out what makes it so different this time when we're facing the exact same dynamic. So I'm thinking out loud, and I'm just expressing that, and I just want to thank you for your time.
Thank you, Representative Neuberger. Comments from members? Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One thing I wanted to say before I answer Representative Neuberger's question, because I have a feeling I might be one of those senior members who made those comments when we had that debate 2 years ago. But we heard a lot of testimony today, and some of the things that were said were factually wrong, medically wrong, legally wrong, historically wrong, biblically wrong. And, you know, I think out of respect for the testifiers, we let people express their opinions without saying the things with which we disagreed. But I just want to be clear that silence during the recitation of alleged historical facts that weren't true or alleged medical facts that weren't true doesn't mean the acquiescence to their truth. So I think that there were some things that were regrettable that were said. The difference, I would say, Representative Neuberg, between this year and the last time this issue came up was this bill is going to the General Register, where it will sit until the budget is done. We have a deadline for policy bills of March 15th, and this bill is respecting that process, and I think that's appropriate. The other thing is the Democrats didn't put this issue in front of the state of Minnesota. This issue came before the state of Minnesota because of the vote that happened on the constitutional amendment that was proposed. This was not an issue that Democrats running for office and Democrats wanting to take back the majority went out and raised as an issue. It was an issue that was raised by Republicans, put on the ballot, and now the issue is before us. I think the question has been called on equal rights. And the question for us, as the people in charge of the institution right now, is will we take up that issue of equal rights, and will we do the right thing? The third thing I'll say that's different is the bill that was before the committee 2 years ago was about taking away rights. This is about granting rights. The issue 2 years ago was arguably electioneering to try to have an outcome in the election that was favorable. We are taking up this issue at our peril. It's not for electoral advantage, and it may not work out that way. But the issue of equal rights is before us, and we're going to address it. To the merits of the bill, I'm a co-author. I'm proud to be a co-author. I don't think I need to say anything more about what a great bill it is.
Thank you, Representative Portman. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and sorry I had to miss part of the testimony this evening. As many people know, we are multitasking and we're in many different places at the same time, but I am very glad that I was here earlier in the day and got to hear all of the testimony in the earlier committee hearing. And as Representative Portman has alluded to, sometimes it was very difficult to listen to. And, of course, we all heard a lot of extremely moving testimony in this committee as well. And the comment that I wanted to make in response to some of that is to remind people that when we're talking about marriage, that we're talking here about our civil institution, the state. The state doesn't sanctify anything. We are government. We don't sanctify anything. That is the job of religious institutions. All we do here in the state of Minnesota is create a legal status. We give people a bundle of rights. And that bundle of rights is what we call civil marriage in this context. That's what we're talking about here, civil marriage. I've been married quite a long time to my husband. We have a civil marriage that is recognized by the state of Minnesota. That is all we have. What religious aspect to that we have is really none of the business of any of the people sitting around this table. So I just want to make that very, very clear.
to the people who came and talked to us about their deeply held religious beliefs. And there was a dialogue here, too, with Representative Holberg and the people at the testifying table about deeply held religious beliefs and so on. And people can hold whatever religious beliefs they want to. But when it comes to the state of Minnesota, I believe that we have to treat everybody the same. And that means that when we give that bundle of legal rights that we call civil marriage, that we cannot discriminate against people on the basis of gender. And we have done that for far too long. So I also wanted to respond to the young girl hours ago who sat at that table. I think she was 11 years old, and in a very dramatic way asked us which of her parents she didn't need. And of course we weren't responding, we were letting everyone testify, so we let her ask that question and it went unanswered. But I want to answer her, because she was asking the wrong question. It was really the wrong question, because this is not about that girl and her family. Because every child who has two parents, clearly they need both of their parents. And if they have a grandparent or an aunt or an uncle or whoever is in their family, clearly those people have great meaning to them. But families are not all the same. And I think just as that girl was saying, which of her parents didn't she need, that was a very unfair question. But I think that gay and lesbian citizens of this state are also asking us a question here. And their question is, why should my family be any less valid than your family? And my answer is, there is no reason, and it's time for that to end.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. Comments from members? Representative Holberg.
I'm sorry, I have another question on another issue on the bill, and I think this one will be a little easier and a little quicker.
Go ahead, Representative Holberg.
It's related to the language on page 4. Lines 12 through 15, and in the state of Minnesota, if a couple is unmarried, the physical and legal custody goes to the mother unless there's a court order otherwise. And that's something really important, especially to young single mothers. And I want to, at least for the record, make sure that it's not your intent to change that standard with this bill.
Professor Carpenter.
I would not read this language to change that standard, but I would defer to the authors of the bill and the sponsors to do so. It's not my...
Right. And
Representative Holberg.
The language that in particular concerns me, where it says, including those that establish parentage presumptions based on marriage, because in the case of unmarried mothers, and this affects, from what I understand, nearly half of all births in Minnesota right now are to unmarried mothers, that we provide that they have legal and physical custody. And I don't think that we should inadvertently change that by some broad rules of construction language in another area of law.
Thank you, Representative Holberg. Your comments? Were you requesting an answer from a specific member, Representative Holberg?
I'm not a lawyer. There's plenty of them on the other side of the table here.
Any lawyers staff, want to fight?
I don't know if anybody wants to weigh in on this, if we need more language to make sure that that's not the case, or...
Next time you'll have to set the hook, Representative Holberg. Is there anyone that cares to comment on that? Well, maybe we'll come back around on that, Representative Holberg. But for now, we're going to move on to other members, unless you have another question.
I don't. I just want to make sure that we're not inadvertently changing that standard, because I think it would cause a lot of problems.
Understood. Give us one moment, Representative Holberg. I think we may have an answer. Professor Carpenter?
Well, the language, again, it's not my reading of the bill to do that. I'm in agreement with you about that. The language that I think you just pointed to is at lines 13 and 14 in the bill on page 4.
And if I might...
Representative Holberg.
Right.
responsibilities of spouses or parents under the laws of the state, including those that establish parentage presumptions based on marriage. What I believe the design of this is, and what I believe this accomplishes, is that it's common in the law when a child is born to a married couple that the couple is presumed to be the are presumed to be the parents of the child, and that's what this is an attempt to address in the context of same-sex couples, ensuring that that child has two legal parents and not just one. So in a way, it's designed to address the very problem that I think you're discussing, which is we don't want children to end up having only the single legal parent.
Mr. Chair, I understand the need for that language in your bill, but in addition to presenting the issue of an unmarried mother, and I'm really concerned with these young moms that dad may be long gone and not good situations. Right now, I think, as well, it's not perfect, what the standard is around that works. In the case where they're not married, and maybe this is your intent, you also would, with this language, have unmarried, so then you'd have unmarried same-sex couples that could sign parentage agreements like we do right now with a lot of times the fathers will sign a parentage agreement in these unmarried situations in the hospital to establish parentage.
Professor Carpenter?
I don't know that these are issues we're going to solve here tonight, but I'd like somebody with some family law expertise to make sure that we accomplish that which you want to do, that you have gender-neutral language around children of same-sex marriage, but not have inadvertent consequences for children of unmarried couples in the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Chairman?
Professor Carpenter, if you're able to just connect with Representative Holbrook offline after the hearing, that would be helpful. Representative Clark.
Yeah, and I just want to say I'm very interested in us addressing your issue, so let's plan to do that.
Thank you, Representative Holbrook. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure if this is going to be off message or not, but I want to disagree a little bit with Representative Liebling, actually, and Representative Hortman. I think that we are addressing this question today because it is a moral question. It is written in law that we have to address because the views of society and the views of people who care about marriage and who care about families are changing very quickly. We, as a state government, have created a privilege and a right in marriage. And I think most of us would agree that the right to marry is an essential liberty. We face this question, whether it's before the budget is passed, after the budget is passed. You did not, I don't think, hear me, Representative Neuberger, say that we shouldn't address these questions, because I think we need to. And the question is whether we should include everyone who has all the characteristics of a traditional marriage in commitment, love, caring for each other, possibly a resolution to become boring with time, which I, you know, is something that happens to married couples. All of those characteristics of marriage and all the character that goes into making a marriage work, those people who have those characteristics and those that character for marriage, whether they should be included or not, and they're not, but for one immutable characteristic. And I think that's the moral question before us. Just, you know, and as I think about it, the traditional arguments or the traditional sentiment against including same-sex couples in marriage fall along the lines of kind of moral questions of sanctity, authority, loyalty, and the question of harm. And I think all those questions have really been resolved in favor of including those people who are so far not included. The harm to families who are not able to have protection of marriage, I think, is very clear, and I think was very amply demonstrated today and is throughout the last campaign and through the last several years. The harm is real. The question of sanctity and whether this is an institution or a relationship or an arrangement that is somehow sacred, I think that is made sacred by the commitment of two people, I think it is made sacred by the inclusion of children and the commitment to live life together. The question of authority, I think for a long time religious authority was fairly unified in its belief that marriage should not exist between people of the same sex. I think that religious authority has dramatically changed its views, and I think we fool ourselves if we do not think that as legislators and as a state government, we don't legislate morality based on the authority of religious organizations. We do, because it reflects the sentiments of our constituents. But I think that authority of religious organizations has changed and is frankly very mixed today. And one of the last things I would consider one of the moral tests is loyalty. And we don't talk about that a great deal, but it's loyalty to people within a group, people in the community. And to me, passing marriage equality is about welcoming families that exist, the families that are out there. It's welcoming them fully into our community and demonstrating the loyalty of Minnesotans to them as they would demonstrate to us, I think, if the question were reversed. And so I do think it is fundamentally a moral question. We're going to disagree on where that comes down based on moral views, but to me, the morality of it is very clear. I strongly support it. And Representative Clark, I'm very proud to be here with you today.
Thank you, Representative Winkler. Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair. Professor Carpenter, I just want a short question on back on the issues that Representative Holberg had a little while ago that I was never able to hear an answer. So I'm going to put in a hypothetical situation. Let's say I own a catering business, and due to my religious beliefs, I could not, in good conscience, have my catering service provide the service at a wedding of a same-sex marriage just because of my religious beliefs. Under the current Minnesota law, would I be sued?
Professor Carpenter.
Under current Minnesota law, without the marriage bill passing, if a couple came to you seeking your business, they would have to file suit under the Minnesota Human Rights Act. They would have to find a provision that applied to your business. Then they would have to establish that they fit within the definitions of the statute. Then we'd have to determine whether there was an exemption that applied. Under the precedent that I read earlier, I think the Minnesota Supreme Court has said, and in interpreting the statute long before sexual orientation was added, that when you enter the marketplace, you are subject to the rules of anti-discrimination. It's a decision that we as a society made about a century ago, that when you enter the marketplace, you are subject to certain rules that you provide services to the public. That is common throughout the United States. And if you could be sued at all, you could be sued today without the marriage bill passing. So I hear legitimate concerns in your question. There's no doubt about that. Those questions, I think, are best aimed at the Minnesota Human Rights Act itself and could be considered in a proposed amendment to the Minnesota Human Rights Act or some other bill, but they're not. There's nothing that this marriage bill changes in the result of that action.
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Professor Carlson, right now under Minnesota law, I would not be providing that service at a wedding. I could be providing that service at a service where they're just performing there, or not a religious service, but just even a civil service, but it's not a religious service. But under this new proposed law, it'd be a marriage. And would there be a difference? Yes, I'm looking for a simple yes or no answer.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think that I hope this is good. I don't think that the marriage bill makes a difference. So the answer would be no, it does not make a difference. I think that businesses, under the Minnesota Human Rights Act, businesses are subject to its provisions regardless of the service they're providing and regardless whether their objections are religious or not, if the statutory criteria are met. And if you have engaged in a form of discrimination that is prohibited under the statute. There are about 14 categories of discrimination under the statute, including race, sex, sexual orientation, veteran status, and so forth. So someone hypothetically suing you would have to establish that they met the criteria for application of the statute, and the bill, this bill does not make a difference in that outcome.
Representative Johnson.
In my personal opinion, I believe it would. I know many, in fact, I have a number of friends and some relatives that live that lifestyle, and I love them dearly. But the difference is right now that I see is we're not doing a wedding ceremony at this time. By adding the wedding ceremony, now it's getting to a different level where it's changing the law and how that application is.
Professor Carpenter.
It may well make a difference to individuals who are defendants in these lawsuits who may object more to a marriage than a civil commitment or a civil union ceremony. Under the law, it doesn't change anything. The fact that you are married doesn't make a difference in the outcome of the claim that you make under the Minnesota Human Rights Act or under this bill. We've had tens of thousands of same-sex marriages performed in the United States as we sit here today, tens of thousands. Very few cases have actually arisen in which same-sex couples have sued for recognition of their marriages from a baker or florist, and nothing has turned in those lawsuits on whether they were married or not. It's simply a matter of previously existing anti-discrimination law. Minnesota has struck a balance in the past few decades. It has among the strongest protections for religious freedom in the country, but at the same time, it recognizes that people must be protected from discrimination in ordinary civic transactions when the discrimination against them is invidious.
Representative Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
I had a choice of either talking about making it personal, telling my story. As in my culture, we talk, and how we talk to our children and how we talk to each other often is through story. But we don't have like 20 minutes for me to tell you my story. So I'm going more on towards the lawyer side and the activist and the advocate. And I was reading an article. It was a history of same-sex marriage. It was written by William Eskridge Jr. He's Yale Law School, and it was part of a faculty scholarship series paper. So I'm going to sort of paraphrase from that. This is what I was thinking about earlier, is that we have heard today that denying same-sex marriage relates not only to the belief that procreation is essential to marriage, but more deeply to fears of homosexuality, just as denying mixed-race marriage was related to deep-seated racial tensions. I believe that marriage is a social construct, and thus it is not and cannot be neutral. The social construction of marriage involves the playing out of power among various groups, as Representative Winkler stated, and that power often divides and oppresses. It should be evident from the testimony heard here today that marriage is dynamic. Because marriage is linked to other attitudes and institutions, including this institution, it will change as attitudes and institutions change. And the fact that I am here and part of this institution means that it already changed, and that many that sit to the left of me here who are here is evident that this institution has changed. I want to end with this statement, and that is sort of sums up what my life has been about, as not only as a lesbian but also as a American Indian, and something that is neither one is a lifestyle.
Please.
Understood. Please, no outbursts with respect to any testifiers or members of the committee who speak out of respect. Thank you. Representative Allen.
And again, this first sentence is paraphrasing. Institutions, including marriage, change when subordinated groups identify their oppression and resist it. And I am proud to be among those, along with Representative Clark, among those that resist it.
Thank you, Representative Allen. Representative Urusso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Excuse me. I'm a little bit hesitant to describe this as granting a right to people under the principles of our country. Equal rights are supposed to be shared by all, and I really feel that what we would be doing is finally recognizing a right of some of our citizens. But I also want to speak to the business aspects of this. There are quite a number of businesses that would welcome the chance to capture the trade involved with marriages between same-sex partners. In my personal experience, I know a couple of young women who, tired of waiting for Minnesota, chose to get married in Iowa. And they were going to just go down there and get married and then come back and have the party. But they decided, you know, Iowa deserved to be rewarded for that, so they had the whole party there. But since then, they have had to spend a lot of money in Minnesota. They've had to spend it on lawyers. Now, I know some of you are lawyers, so I'm like cutting into your business. But they've had to spend money to take care of their wills, which my husband and I finally got around to doing wills, but we didn't have to because Minnesota state law, you know, sets it up pretty clearly what would have happened if either of us had died. And they've taken care of their advanced care directives, and we did finally get around to taking care of that, but we could drag our feet because Minnesota state law takes care of that pretty well for us. And they've recently had a young daughter, and they had to spend a couple thousand dollars on lawyers and fees and whatnot. And we didn't have to do any of that. My husband was automatically granted parenthood of my three children. And he's never had to do anything for that. He's never had to talk to a lawyer. He's never had to file any, you know, I mean, it was automatic under the law. And so we take for granted, you've probably heard about the 515 things. But you have to realize those are not special things. Those are things that we take for granted. That I got, all I had to do was fill out that marriage license and stand up in front of some people. And I got all of that, all at once, and along with it a free name change.
Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've just been kind of mulling over in my head what Representative Hortman was saying. And, you know, I just need to make a point here, make this clear, that I spent the better part of this afternoon listening to the arguments of some of the finest legal minds I've yet to meet. And I'm not saying that to score brownie points. I've gotten to know you folks, and you're really smart. The point I'm trying to make is you convinced me 2 years ago. The dynamics, we're 10 weeks out from the end of the session, and we have yet to really see anything of a budget. And the dynamics really are, to me, they're the same. You guys convinced me 2 years ago, and I'm just not convinced that this is a different thing, and that the timing, the characteristics are all pretty much the same, and I just want to echo that, to let you know that 2 years ago you're the ones that talked me into the whole timing issue, and I'm quite impressed. So I just want to thank you for that, and just to let you know that I'm not convinced that we're arguing two different things here. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Neuberger. Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I first want to say a word about what we've heard today about some of the religious liberty provisions in this bill. I think looking at this bill compared with the protections in place in other states that have already legalized same-sex marriage, this is one of the most, and quite possibly the most protective, even aggressively protective, bill in the country. You look at the categories that legal scholars on both sides of this issue look at when they're looking at religious protections, and you look at the language in this bill. This bill explicitly allows clergy and institutions to refuse to perform marriages. Not all states do. We would. This bill specifically allows religious organizations to provide goods or services related to the marriage ceremony. Not all states do. This bill does. So would we if this passes. This bill also says that religious organizations are defined very broadly to include faith-based social service agencies and other affinity-based organizations. Not every state does that. It's about half and half. This bill does. We would. And finally, there's even a separate provision in this bill that would allow religious organizations to do what they would in most circumstances when it comes to things like adoption or foster care or other social services. Not many states do that. Precious few. We do. We would if this passes. That really is, I think, a tremendous thing, and I think it strikes the right balance. And I hope, at least, given what I think are some very thoughtful and useful concerns expressed by members of this committee and ones that I take very seriously, I think that's something worth knowing and worth thinking about, that great care was taken in this bill to make sure as much as possible that religious liberty and religious freedom and freedom of conscience was protected. There may be other suggestions along the way, and I'm sure there are proponents that would be open to hearing those suggestions, but as it is right now, this is a very, very strong and very, very generous bill in those categories. Second, just a word about polling, because as we all know from either our own races or others that we've followed, or any contest in the public mind, be it election or anything else, the wording of the poll matters. And I too saw the Star Tribune poll, but I noticed that there's one word that appears to make a difference when I look at all the polls, including one that was flip-flopped, that came out from a private group about 2 days before the Star Tribune poll, and one that came out a little bit earlier this year, is that when you explain to people that it's civil marriage, like the kind you could get at City Hall, when you explain that it's a civil contract and civil marriage, then the support shoots up when they know that fact, and then the result gets flip-flopped, notwithstanding the Star Tribune poll. So I think, as we all know, it depends on how you ask the question. The other thing that I don't think really is in doubt is where the trend line is, where things are headed. And it doesn't take a statistician to show the tremendous, almost light-speed movement on this issue in the last few years. Keep in mind, when I first got here in 2005, along with Representative Hortman, Representative Liebling, others in my class, the version of the constitutional amendment then, in 2005, only 8 years ago, some of which, and there are members in this room that voted for that, would have made unconstitutional not only marriages, but civil unions. It would have said not only are they illegal, they are unconstitutional, supreme law. Now I'm hearing that behind the scenes there may be even a strategy by opponents to embrace civil unions, lest we go to marriages. I mean, my how times have changed. In 8 years, some of the same people are now almost hoping for civil unions so as to stave off marriage, when just 8 years ago, the constitutional amendment that we voted on, March 31st, 2005, go and look it up in the House Journal, that constitutional amendment said that civil unions, too, would be unconstitutional. So, you know, whether it's Laura Bush or Dick Cheney or a host of others from across the political spectrum, I think we know where this issue is headed historically. And then finally, just in terms of the nature of this bill, religiously or otherwise, you know, I've said about this bill, but others as well, that there are three basic types of policy bills that we pass in this place: bills that forbid something, bills that require something, and then there's this happy middle ground, which is a bill that simply allows something. It's not telling anyone what to do. It's not telling anyone what they can't do. It's simply tolerating, permitting, and allowing two people to do something that they desperately, desperately want to do, and in the grand scheme of things, is hurting no one. That's what this bill does. And I like to say that it's not just live and let live, it's live and let love. And that's what we ought to do.
Thank you, Representative Simon. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I look around this table and I don't see too many rural members. Representative Anderson and Mr. Neuberger are from more rural type from rural areas. And I don't have with me the map of Minnesota of the results of the marriage amendment. But most of the people sitting around this table were metro-centric. And the map of Minnesota, in some of these rural areas, the marriage amendment passed 60% or more. And I just don't want us to get ahead of ourselves here. in this committee, because we have a lot of, we have a large diversity of people in our membership, and they represent people too. And regardless of what the folks around this table who we represent, there are other people to take into consideration here. We have to take this bill very carefully. We have an entire state, much of which doesn't feel the same way as maybe some of the people around this table and around the people in the metro area, and I just wanted to be on record as saying that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Scott. Comments from members? Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I think that we have an obligation to lead on this issue. Minnesota needs to step up and lead. It is time we grant people the civil rights that they've deserved. I encourage members to vote yes.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. Comments from members? Representative Clark? Representative Paymar?
Just real quickly, Mr. Chair, I know it's been a long day. I just want to just, first of all, thank Representative Clark for all the work you've done on this bill. And I was in this body when we had the debate on DOMA, and I remember I got up on the House floor and my legs were shaking, but I so wanted to oppose that bill, and I so wanted to stand with you in solidarity. And to see how far we've come and to see how close we're getting, I'm just, I couldn't be more thrilled. And I, you know, we will deal with the budget. We will deal with the budget. By May 20th, we'll be out of here or before. We'll deal with it. We know how serious that is. But we can deal with other issues, and the time has come. I just absolutely believe that with all my heart, and I would just like to echo what Representative Simon said. You know, we've heard about budgets, we've heard about morality, we've heard about religion, but, you know, when you listen to the testimony of some of the folks who've come here, that fundamentally what people are talking about is love. And why aren't we advocating that? Why aren't we embracing that? Why aren't we encouraging that? And we have the opportunity to do that today. And I know this isn't an easy issue for folks, and I've read all the emails, and but this is the time, this is the year, this is the day. I hope that people can vote yes on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Paymar. And Representative Clark, before your final comments, just a comment from the chair. Representative Neuberger, I hear you on your comments and your concerns. I remember 2011, and I remember out of the 11 years now that I've spent serving in the legislature, out of 6 budget cycles, that was the 1 year where the bill deadlines were reversed to have fiscal deadlines happen prior to policy bill deadlines in an effort to spur discussion and make things happen on the budget. It also resulted in a government shutdown that summer. There was no budget passed. There was no budget resolution prior to the time we moved on to talking about social issues. In this case, we have the same rules in place that we've had the other 10 years of my tenure, that being that policy bills occur first. So even now, as we speak, the governor is preparing a supplementary budget recommendation. That conversation is happening, but we are following the process here to ensure adequate discussion happens and this doesn't fall off the table in the midst of all the wrangling towards the end of session. With respect to the issue, I want to thank you, Representative Clark, for bringing this forward. I abhor when religion is thrust into the midst of politics. I abhor it, but inevitably it happens. I consider myself a person of faith. I don't talk about my faith, but I do recall the faith leader about which I was taught growing up, Jesus Christ, who was attempted to be trapped by political issues, which he abhorred as well. And when he was attempted to be trapped, his response was, "Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, and render unto God what is God's." Members, we are not dealing with anything but, as stated, civil marriage here. I hope we can do that and bring fairness to the people of Minnesota. Representative Clark, final comments, and then we're going to take a vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members, each and every one of you. It's been an honor to be at this table and listen to your discussion, your concerns, and I've worked with many of you on many different aspects of state law, and this one is especially important, I think, because as has been described so well by some of you, I'm not going to repeat your beautiful arguments and beautiful statements. This is a matter of civil marriage. This is a matter of honoring and granting respect to all of our families. And I wouldn't be bringing this bill forward if I didn't know that what it will be to strengthen Minnesota's families. It will really strengthen us. It will bring us together. I don't see it as a divisive issue. I see it as a unifying issue. I really think that's possible if we all put our hearts and minds to it. So I just ask you to support this bill. Help people understand what's in it and what is not in it. There's myths that happen around any piece of legislation. So please help people understand that there's very strong religious freedom protections in here. Very strong. And that was deliberate. We spent a lot of time listening to people who were concerned about that when we were putting this bill together. And I want to thank all the people who helped write this bill. Representative Simon, you were right there at the table quite a bit of the time. I want to thank you especially. But the community was heard. And I do ask that you vote for this bill. We can make Minnesota the 9th state in the union. We're not the first. The 9th, and if we're not in a big hurry and maybe we get our budget passed and everything first, we may be like the 11th, because there's two other states that are sitting right on the verge of passing this legislation too. So I just ask you to please support this legislation and again strengthen all of our families, strengthen our communities. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Clark. Representative Simon moves that House File 1054 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register. A roll call having been requested, the CLA will take the roll.
Chairman Lesh.
Aye.
Vice Chair Ellen.
Yes.
Representative Anderson.
No.
Representative Hellstrom.
Aye.
Representative Holberg.
No.
Representative Portman.
Aye.
Representative Howe.
No.
Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Liebling.
Yes.
Representative Neuberger.
No.
Representative Paymar.
Aye.
Representative Pugh.
No.
Representative Rosenthal.
Yes.
Representative Simon.
Yes.
Representative Scott.
No.
Representative Winkler.
Yes.
Representative DeRusso.
Yes.
Vote total being 10 to 7. Motion passes. Members, there being no other business before the committee is adjourned.